is the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
McCoy at the 10, at the 5, into the end zone. Touchdown! And a great run.
Fires down the middle.
It is intercepted by Micah Hyde. Intercepted. Tre Day. Tre'Davious White.
He's in trouble. He is set. Jordan Poyer came unblocked. It is Jerry Hughes who brings him down. What a big play there. McCoy cuts to the right.
Outrunning everybody. 10, 5. Touchdown, Buffalo!
Live from One Bills Drive, this is the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts.
Hello there, welcome to the show on Tuesday, the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones here to talk about the Bills for the next 3 hours, and a pretty good show coming up. We may or may not have a player guest coming up. I would bet not, if I were a betting man. What do you got there? Most of the things I said, I usually said them.
I usually said them.
That's the truth.
That's the truth.
Donald Jones, that's going on his headstone.
That's right.
Still can't. I got thinking about that, and I get a headache. What exactly does that mean?
I'm telling you, I sound like Chuck Pagano.
Yeah, we're going to hear from Chuck Pagano. He sounds like he went off the rails a little bit today. 1 o'clock today, Trey Wingo from ESPN, the host of the new Golic and Wingo show, coming up at 1 o'clock. Coming up at 1:30, Donald with his Nuts and Bolts presented by Napa. What are you going to look at today, Donald?
What are we looking at today? We're going to look at some of the plays from the last game, you know, offensively and defensively. Some of the big plays, some of the plays that, or at least one play that was a little bit confusing in the way it happened. And I'm talking about the Charles Clay catch, you know. So we're just going to look at a couple of these plays and just talk about looking forward towards the Patriots and some of the things that they need to do.
That's coming up, Nuts and Bolts at 1:30 today. Steve Tasker joins us in studio at 2 o'clock, and that's what we're looking at today. And hope you are going to stay with us for at least a little while today as we talk about the Bills. It's kind of the calm before the storm, it feels like, doesn't it, with the Patriots game coming up a little bit?
Yeah, it is definitely the calm before the storm. You know, Bills fans don't know too many games where the Patriots have come in here or gone, you know, the Bills have gone out to New England and beat the Patriots. But this is a big game for the Bills. You know, as we saw last night, the Baltimore Ravens won, and the Bills need to continue to win games if they want that final playoff spot, and you have to hope that the Baltimore Ravens lose, you know. So you can't really just concede, you know, say that the Patriots are going to win this game. The Bills need to win this game at home. You have three games at home in December, three meaningful games at home in December, and you're a team that has been talking all year about defending your own turf, defending your dirt. Mm-hmm. That's what they need to do this week. If they want to be in the playoffs, you have a great opportunity, and it starts this week.
Well, and I don't normally like to project ahead, but we're at the point in the season where we might be able to get away with that a little bit with just five games remaining, and we want you to project ahead a little bit. You've seen the Bills. You know, most of you have watched the Bills through the ups and downs of the season, the early highs, the three-game slump, and then, you know, a rebound last Sunday against Kansas City. So we want to get a sense from you about where this season's going. And we framed the question this way. It's our Twitter poll. It's a way we'd like to start the conversation on the telephone lines at 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550. What do you think about these remaining five games? You know the drill. Five games, three at home, four against division opponents, two with the Patriots, two with the Dolphins, one against the Colts, and five games left. We want to know from you. How many wins do you see in those final five games for the Buffalo Bills? That's our Twitter poll. It's been up on Twitter for a little bit. Pretty good response. How many wins do you see the Bills getting in their final five games? 78% overwhelmingly say 2 to 3 wins, which obviously would get you to, what, 8 or 9 wins at the end of the year. 14% of you say 4 or 5 wins. That would get you to 10 or 11 wins. That would be outstanding. And just 8% of you, not many, say 0 or 1 more win this year, which would keep you at 6 or get you to 7. Certainly not playoff territory. I can't disagree with that. I think there's 2 or 3 wins left in this Bills season. I thought going into the year, how many times have I said this? They were going to win somewhere between 7 and 9, and I still think they're going to land somewhere between 7 and 9, Donald. And hopefully they get to 9, and they have a real shot at this, a real look at it with the games that remain. Patriots at home, Colts at home, Dolphins at home. Bang, bang, bang. 3 home games coming up. And then the visit to the Patriots on Christmas Eve, and then home or on the road at the Dolphins on New Year's Eve. You can see 3 wins there, I think.
Yeah, I can see 3 wins there and getting to 9 wins. The issue is it is so hard to sweep a team in this league, you know, to beat them twice. That is very hard to do as we saw with the Jets. You know, going into that game, we would have said, man, the Bills, they should win this game, you know. But we saw how that one played out. It's tough to sweep a team, you know, especially if you beat them here at home and then you have to go down to Miami the last game of the season. They're going to want that revenge, especially if you're playing to get into the playoffs and they're not. That is their season right there. We just had a chance to knock the Bills out of the playoffs, you know, so it's hard to sweep a team. So that's why I say it's so important this game this week, you know, and not to just look past, which I know a lot of Bills fans have probably looked past the Patriots and said, all right, you're not going to beat the Patriots, so you need to win against Miami twice and the Colts and hope you get the 9 wins, and hopefully that will get you in the playoffs. They need to win this game because it is so hard to sweep a team in this league.
Yeah, a couple of tweets already that raise some interesting questions. Colin Church says, guaranteed like the Jets and Bengals games? No, there's no guarantees. We know that. We're kind of projecting out here, doing what we don't typically like to do, but certainly there's no guarantees. There's no guarantees for the Patriots either, I might say. And then Colin Church says, we might beat the Patriots if they start their backups the second time we play, which is Christmas Eve, but that would require the Steelers to lose a couple of games, I suppose. And that's the interesting part that we cannot forecast, what goes on around the rest of the AFC in the remaining weeks. But you can almost see it. If the Patriots have everything clinched by Christmas Eve, you know, after, by the way, after the Patriots play that kind of that critical game when they're going to face off against New England, right? What's that, week 15?
Week 15.
Yeah, and then week 16, week 16, it's the Bills, and then week 17, the Jets. If the Patriots have it all clinched with two games to go, which is, I think, unlikely, but I guess possible, maybe they don't, you know, maybe they play their back. Although, yeah, it's hard to imagine Belichick doing that for two games. Maybe the finale, but two games, not playing the starters.
I don't remember Belichick doing that at all. Not even the last game of the season. And you're talking about a team that is usually, you know, they're trying to get home field advantage. So the last game of the season, typically they are in position to just sit their guys. And yeah. I don't remember him actually doing that in the course of the last
Buffalo game 2 years ago, right, regular season finale, they started their starters and they played a half.
A half, okay.
So, you know, Garoppolo came in the second half.
Right.
And a lot of other starters. There were some other starters who didn't play.
But you're talking about this would be this would be week 16, right?
Week 17, game 16.
Yeah, okay.
Or no, the Patriots?
Week 16, yeah.
Week 16, Bills play game the Patriots. 15, yeah.
Yeah, so you're talking about doing it 2 weeks in a row, you know? That's hard to see. I don't see that happening unless they have something clinched and the Steelers just fall off the rails, you know, after they beat the Steelers and they've already clinched. I don't really see that happening 2 weeks in a row, though, where he'll sit guys. I see it the last week of the season for a half or something like that, like you just said, but not, you know, second to last week of the season and then the last week of the season. No, so the Bills are going to have to beat them. That's just what it is.
Beat
the Patriots. And to be honest with you, you need to beat them here in Buffalo. You know, when you have a chance to beat them at home, you need to beat them at home because it's so hard to go into New England and beat them. You might as well go ahead and take care of business right here and set yourself up so that, you know, in that game, the second to last week of the season, you're in position where, you know, I don't want to say it doesn't really matter if you win or lose that game, but you're in a better position than we got to go down to New England and beat them to get into the playoffs. You don't want to put yourself in that position.
You don't want to wait too long to be that desperate is what you're saying. Look, we're going to talk a lot about this matchup as the week goes ahead, and I hope we don't get ourselves to the point. I certainly know that you won't either. We're not going to get here Friday and say, I think the Bills are going to win. I have a good feeling. Maybe they will. But there is anything can happen in the league. We know that. And as I start to look at this matchup, there's some glaring numbers on the Patriots' defense which just jump out at you, I think. You know, they're the 30th-ranked defense in the National Football League. They're the third-worst defense in the NFL. They are the worst defense in the NFL in yards per rush. They give up a lot of rushing yardage. Now, they make up for it. They average close to 30 points per game on the offensive side of the ball. But against the run, their opponents are averaging 4.9 yards per carry. That would seem to be something the Bills could look at. Their passing defense, pass defense, not that much better. 31st in the league, second to last in the league in pass defense. These are things, look, they're not the answers, certainly. But for me, it's a place to begin when I start looking at video later tonight. What is going on with their defense? You know, how can they give up 4.9 yards per carry? How can they be the second worst pass defense in the National Football League? And what does that mean for this game? It means opportunity, I think, for a Bills team that likes to run the football, that is going to want to keep Brady and that offense off the field. I do think there is a window of opportunity there. Is it realistic? We'll see. I'm going to look at video this week and kind of emerge into some kind of answers as the week goes along. But those numbers jump out at me.
Those numbers do jump out.
Those are bad numbers.
The Bills need to this week, and we've been talking about this all year, how do you get this running game going? You know, what do you need to do to beat a team with a high-octane offense like the Patriots? They can score a lot of points. So what do the Bills need to do this week? When you talk about those numbers, they need to run the ball. They need to stay on the field. The one thing that they have not done, even though they might have some games where they'll have some good drives and they hold on to the ball, they have not consistently scored touchdowns, especially in the red zone. You know, so against this Patriots team, because we always say this every year, the Patriots don't beat themselves, right? Like, they take advantage of all of their – most of their opportunities. Every now and then you might get an interception or something like that, but they take advantage of most of their opportunities. So if you're driving down the field – you can't stand to just stall out. You can't stand to have a penalty after you get a huge play. Then you get a, you know, an unsportsmanlike or offsides, and you put yourself at first and 15 or something like that. And now you stall out and you have to kick a field goal because they score touchdowns, you know. So on offense, they need to play penalty free. They need to hold on to the ball, keep Brady off the field. And on defense, they need to get back to what they were doing early in the season, what they did this past weekend.
Yeah.
You know, stop the run, and you need to cover. You know, do a good job of covering up on the back end. They need to get pressure on Brady, and they need to get pressure up the middle in Brady's face, because that's when he is off the mark.
Yeah, and what you don't want to do, I think, as you look ahead to this game, what I try to avoid doing is expecting something to happen that hasn't happened before.
Right.
And, you know, that's how you get in trouble, like if you're betting horses or handicapping anything. Like, you start looking at grasping at straws, like, what could happen here that would produce a victory? And if it hasn't happened before, if you haven't seen it by now this deep into the season, chances are you're not going to see it.
Right.
So the Bills, from time to time, do make costly penalties. You know, they average about 7.4 penalties per game. Mm. They've been known to do that. They haven't been a consistently strong run game. That would go a long way towards helping out with a victory this week. So, you know, what's my point? I don't know. You don't. It's hard to forecast a Buffalo victory this week, but it can happen. And those numbers on defense, I think, are eye-opening for New England's defense.
The offense, and we talk so much about the Bills' defense, and the defense is the key to the Bills winning. Well, the offense this week has to play for the defense as well. You know, and what I mean by that is the offense needs to stay on the field. They need to have long drives, keep Brady off the field. After this game, when we look back at, you know, the stat book, and you look back at the time of possession, the Bills need to just totally dominate the time of possession, and they need to finish those drives with touchdowns. If they do that, and the Bills' defense plays like they did this past weekend, plays like they did early in the season, then you can definitely see a win. The Bills' offense needs to play, I want to say, perfect. You know, you're never going to be perfect, but you need to play mistake-free football. Don't kill yourselves. Don't hurt yourselves. And if you do that, you give yourself a chance to win.
All right, what do you think? Give us a call. The lines are open, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. You can do it on Twitter. Participate in our Twitter poll. 5 games left for the Buffalo Bills this season. How many wins do you see in those 5 games that remain? 0-1, 2-3, or 4-5? It's pretty simple. I mean, we're asking in a different way, do they make the playoffs or not? They didn't get help last night, Donald, from the Houston Texans, who did not look up to the task at all. As poorly as Baltimore played, the game was there for them, and Houston just couldn't do anything with them. They're kind of a mess.
When you look at the Baltimore team, they have a good defense. That they do have. Their offense is shaky, though. You know, Joe Flacco can't get it going. He can't throw the ball down the field, which is surprising to me, because you have two speed demons on the outside and Jeremy Maclin and Mike Wallace. So the fact that they can't get the ball down the field is shocking. They got their running game going a little bit yesterday, you know, but that is a team that, when you look at the rest of their schedule, and we talked about, you know, their schedule, they still have Detroit this week, you know, and Detroit can put up some points. And Detroit is, I'm sure, trying to fight for a wild card slot or their division out there, and even though Minnesota's kind of running away with that thing, they're trying to get into a wild card berth as well. So you would think Detroit is coming into this game ready to go, and they're going to put some points on the board. They have a quarterback and receivers that can do it. I don't know if Baltimore can score with them. You look at Baltimore's schedule. You have Detroit. You still have Cincinnati and Pittsburgh on their schedule. So they're kind of in the same boat. You know, they have to win some big games, and I don't know if offensively they have the firepower unless those guys just miraculously change and play a lot better than they did last night. I don't know if they can beat all of those teams. The Bills just have to handle business. And if you handle business like you're supposed to, especially at home in the next three games, then you set yourself up the last 2 weeks of the season to be in position to get into the playoffs.
So what does that mean for the Bills handling business? Certainly more than zero or one win, 2-3 or maybe 4 or 5. Give us a call. Let us know. 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. Well, the Bills are coming. You know, the one thing they did, now Donald mentioned it, you know, you're looking for them to play the defense the way they played against Kansas City a couple of days ago. Leslie Frazier, Buffalo's defensive coordinator, talked about that defensive performance yesterday when he met with the media late in the day.
As you and I both know, in the NFL, it's always week to week, and it's so different from week to week. You just look around the league at how quickly things can shift and turn, and you know, fortune for us, we were able to get it done yesterday, and now we have a big-time opponent coming to our place. So, you know, you shift and you move on to the next opponent.
The fact that you saw what you were trying to preach on the field, I mean, how there had to be a large level of validation in that.
Oh, no doubt. I mean, when you're preaching the same message over and over and over, you just go, man, are these guys really hearing it? Because we've seen them do it. We know they can do it. And you hope they don't lose their confidence and begin to doubt and second guess, and pretty soon you lose hope. But that wasn't the case. I mean, they believed. They continued to work at their art throughout the week in practice, and they listened to the message. I mean, you can do it. Stay gap sound. You're able to limit people's run game, and, you know, there's certain things you have to be able to do fundamentally to get that done. And those guys listened, and they were able to get it accomplished.
Leslie Frazier talking about the defensive performance. Sean McDermott talked about it too. McDermott said something interesting yesterday when we carried his news conference live, how he saw signs that the defense was improving even before last Sunday, you know, even with the margin of victory at Los Angeles against the Chargers and the week prior to that against the Saints. Sean McDermott talked about it yesterday about his team's defense, and we'll get to that in a moment. 803-0550, the number to call, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy and Donald Jones, live from One Bills Drive.
You think we'll see Mike Gillislee this week?
I don't know. You know, I looked that up. He has not played. He's been the proverbial healthy scratch for the last three games for New England. Hasn't played. He's basically was number four on the depth chart. Mike Reese wrote about it on ESPN.com on Sunday. A healthy scratch for three straight weeks. He was inactive. Deion Lewis, Rex Burkhead, James White, top running backs on the depth chart. And Brandon Bolden, who's a special teamer, is another running back on the depth chart. So what are we talking about? We're talking about the Patriots just sticking it to throwing it in the Bills' face?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we're talking about. And you know, that would be a typical Bill Belichick type of move, you know. Put him in there and make him a feature back this week, you know, and give him some carries, especially – closer to the goal line, put touchdown Mike in and let him score against the Bills in Buffalo. You know, it's just weird that, I mean,
you know, why they can do that? Because they have Tom Brady.
Yeah,
you can do what might not be what you've done or in the best interest of your team, knowing that you have a quarterback who can cover that up.
Exactly. When you have a quarterback who can cover things up, even if he comes in and he doesn't do anything for them, they put him in the game and let's just stick it to him. You know, they put him in the game and he just gets stuffed every time he gets in the game. When you have a quarterback like Tom Brady and you have a Rob Gronkowski and you have an Amendola and those guys, he can cover all of that stuff up because he can make up for penalties that you might have on offense. He can make up for so many different things because he is that good, you know. So that's why they're able to do different things like that. That's why they're able to let's feature this guy this week when he hasn't been featured since week one of the season. You know, I mean, it's amazing the things that they can do, but it's all because they have that quarterback.
You think they'll do it? Dress him?
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised.
I guess
I wouldn't be surprised.
They're unbelievable. We're going to break. We'll be back in a moment. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones, live from our One Buffalo studio. The Bills getting set to play the New England Patriots on Sunday, and no practice for players today, but several players involved in a special initiative, the second year in a row for the NFL, and the players to get involved in My Cause, My Cleats. It's a unique opportunity. Players wear custom footwear in a regular season game. It'll happen this week.
Yes.
Jordan Mills, Bill's offensive lineman, joins us here to talk about his cause, his cleats. And for those watching on the television side, you have the shoes right here, Jordan.
Yeah, this week is, like you said, My Cause, My Cleats. This week I'm going to be representing the Sickle Cell Association of America. And the reason why I'm doing this is basically because of my nephew. Ever since he was born, he's been diagnosed with sickle cell, been battling it on and off, in and out the hospital since I can remember. And he's been a warrior. And the exact reason why I play so hard and I play the game is because of him. Because a cool story. My senior year in high school, I was playing in an all-star game, and he was there watching me play, and I gave him the inspiration to play sports, and he wanted to play football. He told us that I want to play that sport. He went out, tried out for it, and then got on the team. But unfortunately, because of sickle cell, he couldn't continue it. So this is the reason that he's my cause, and I'll be wearing these Sunday.
And you have a picture of him on the cleats, purple and white. That's the color for sickle cell.
Yeah, it's like a burgundy kind of purple kind of color, but this is the color for it, and it's a picture of him. Actually, another special moment, this is him at my wedding. He was one of my groomsmen.
Oh,
so
yeah.
You see him with the bow tie,
did know? He did he say, look man, if you're gonna do it, you got to put my picture on there?
He doesn't even know. I sent him a I'm going to send him a text after this. He doesn't even know. He's gonna be surprised. He's probably gonna tear up a little bit. But I'll make sure he's looking good on here.
You made sure he's looking good for your wedding.
Yeah.
How old is he, Jordan?
He's now 20. He's more like my little brother than my nephew. I say that all the time because he's like my little brother I never had. He was born when I was 7 years old, so he's been around me. When I was going into that teenager stage and all that stuff, he was always lagging behind me, watching everything I do. So mm-hmm. He's more my, I say my little brother than my nephew.
And he's down in Louisiana?
Yeah, he's in Louisiana now, near my mother and my parents right now. He's down there with his mother, living his 20s out. So
the best version of his life.
Yeah.
Is he coming up for the game?
Unfortunately, he's not going to be up for the game. I'm going to try to get him up for the next week's game against the Colts.
And so he's battling sickle cell still, but doing okay?
He's doing okay. He has his few moments when he's feeling weak or something like that. But, he takes his medicine and goes to the hospital. Next day he's fine. So it's been an on and off thing. It's been situations he had to stay in the hospital for a week. It's been situations he's gone for a checkup and been fine. But, his whole life he's battled. He's a true testament of, being persistent and being a fighter.
Jordan Mills is with us, Bill's offensive lineman, talking about the My Cause, My Cleats campaign. The last I read, there were almost 500 players or more around the league that are doing this. And what are you trying to do, raise awareness for your cause, or everybody's raises awareness for their individual cause?
Yeah, it's just I'm just raising awareness just to do it. I actually wanted, because of my nephew, wanted to start a foundation dealing with that and some other things. So I'm getting into that. Hopefully I can get something done pretty soon. But just, drawing inspiration and basically just, letting my nephew know that I'm always thinking about him.
You'll be one of several players on the field, I think, here in New Era Field Sunday, wearing your own individualized cleats. That'll be a different look, right?
Yeah.
Everybody have different shoes on?
Yeah.
It'll look kind of cool, actually.
How long did it take you to come up with this idea for what you want to do for the cleat?
It took me a while. I won't say a while. I had to find the right picture. Mm-hmm. The designer, shout out to the Hey Man Studios and Polo down here in Buffalo that, came up with the design. They looked it up, got the pictures and stuff like that. All I had to do was send a picture of my nephew, and they took care of it. So, and when I, when I saw him, man, it was incredible. So, shout out to them.
I got a question for you. How often would you change your shoes, your cleats, during the course of a season? I mean, don't you break some in and get comfortable with them?
Yeah, but, you know, some cliche, you know, when you slip them on, they get comfortable. I'm going to slip these on. Actually, try yep. to walk around them in the locker room today. And then when
you have practice during
yeah,
the week?
Yeah, try to, you know, wear them during walkthroughs and stuff like that to get a good fit. But these cleats, usually when I put them on the first time, they fit perfectly, even though I have fat feet.
I got the same issue. Yeah. Like, what size are these?
16.
16. That's ridiculous. Yeah, I got the same. I got the same issue though. So I would only wear, you know, maybe two pair of cleats yeah. in a full season. Yeah. You know, where other guys would have a new pair every week.
Yeah, our skill positions that wear different cleats every week, they get to wear the, you know, fancy.
Yeah,
Nike cleats. But
yeah, I was a skill guy. I didn't yeah. get to, you know. Yeah. I had one pair of fancies. Yeah. I had a pair for camp, and then I had a pair for games and a pair for practice. That was it, yeah. you know, because they hurt yeah. so much when you're trying to put them on.
Yeah,
and they're new.
Definitely.
But you'll wear those Sunday, and yeah. you'll be surrounded by teammates who have their own yeah. cleats
yeah.
on.
Yeah.
My cause, my cleats.
Yes.
Let's talk a little bit about last Sunday, a couple of days ago. The running game, it seemed, got going pretty good with yeah. Shady and with Travis Cadet against the Chiefs, huh?
Yeah, it did. You know, that's one thing that Coach McDermott preached, you know, be physical and, you know, get the run game going. And that's we took it upon ourselves as a challenge to, you know, make him right and get the run game going. And then Shady, you know, Shady does what he does, making people miss and, you know, getting yards from him. And then TC came in. You know, he got here a couple of weeks ago, and it's like he's been with us, you know, the whole season. So, you know, we're going to continue to do everything in our power every week, every practice, you know, to get these guys free and get them to the second level, because once they get to the second level, it's hard to tackle them.
Yeah. Now, you guys have been under a lot of scrutiny this year, the offensive line, especially with the running game not going like we're used to it going here yeah. in Buffalo. How do you take that personally every week, individually and as a team?
You know, us as a group, we, you know, we try not to pay attention to, like, the outside thoughts because, mm-hmm. you know, take it week by week. But, you know, you got to take it personal when you got a great back like Shady in the backfield, and it gets frustrating sometimes when you don't get, you know, the opportunities to allow him to have a breakout game. But mm-hmm. we take it upon ourselves, you know, just take it week by week. And, you know, we know if we keep pounding at that rock that, you know, something's going to pop, and we keep, you know, pushing it forward and forward. And something's going to, you know, he's going to break loose and make a, you know, great run. And even when we're not, you know, technically sound on everything, Shady's going to make you right. Because, you know, I might not have the greatest technique, but he, with his moves and stuff like that, he'll make you right and make a play. So, you know, it's frustrating at times. You know, the season hasn't gone as the way we wanted to, rushing-wise, like the last two seasons. But, you know, you just got to keep taking it one play at a time, and, you know, it's going to break out.
Let's think about Shady, it seems, and we know him now after a couple of years here with the Bills, what, 2.5 years. He can, you know, he can have some negative plays, some negative rushing plays, and you get maybe a little frustrated what's going on, and then, boom, he'll break one, you know, yeah. 18 yards, 27 yeah. yards, you yeah. know what I mean? There are some negative plays almost baked into what he does on a regular basis.
Yeah, it happens, and, you know, that happens with any running back. You know, you know, mentality is always trying to make a play and, you know, get yards. So, you know, it's some negative plays here and there that we don't try to have, but it happens throughout a game. It's going to happen. But, you know, with Shady, you know, all right, if it happens, you know, something special is coming.
Yeah.
Something special is coming soon. So with him, you always got to be aware, you know, defenses know that and they're aware of that. And that, you know, you still got to prepare for him every single game.
Is it hard to block for guys like Shady or even a guy like Tyrod Taylor, who you never really know where these guys are going to be? Is it hard to block for those guys?
No. You just gotta have that mentality in your mind. You're not letting that guy get past you or stay on your block because you, no matter what, just like you said, you never know where they're going to be. So you got to just work hard to sustain your block and, you know that, you know, Tyrod or Shady's going to break free, and once they break free, is good luck after that.
Jordan, there's opportunities this week. As good as the Patriots are, 7 straight wins, all mm-hmm. of that. You just sheer looking at numbers, and I said to Donald, I haven't looked at video yet,
yeah.
but they're dead last in the league. They give up 4.9 yards per rush, dead yeah. last in the league. I mean, that's kind of a It got my attention today, looking at numbers.
Yeah, that gets your attention, but at the same time, you got to show them the respect that, you know, their head coach and the defensive coordinator, they're gonna have a plan for us. So, you know, that's the same thing every year. They might have something going on, but, you know, Bill Belichick always has something up his sleeve when he plays us. So, you know, they might be dead last, but we're expecting their best effort, and we're coming charging too. So, you know, I heard that also, but we're expecting their best coming this Sunday.
And Belichick will change week to week, won't he?
Yeah,
he'll show you
definitely.
Look, you probably haven't seen him.
Yeah, definitely. He'll show one thing each week that, you know, you study all week, and then you come to game time, he won't show it, but have something different that he hasn't done all year. So you got to prepare for something like that. And we have a great coach staff that, you know, have minds like that. You know, Coach McDermott, Coach Dennison, they're going to cook up a plan for us to, you know, execute.
Have you thought about playoffs yet? I mean, you know, here we are getting ready for New England, and it's out there. You know,
yeah.
Your goal is still out there.
But yeah.
You focus on that? You focus on what lies ahead? Or
focus
on this Sunday?
You know, you focus on this Sunday. You know, all since we got here, all Coach McDermott has preaches playoff caliber. Everything you do is playoff caliber. So that's a part of us no matter what. But we take each week one game at a time. Nothing, you know, we're looking forward to the playoffs. But to get to the playoffs, we've got to take care of this week. We've got to take care of the New England Patriots, and that's the task at hand this week.
There's a lot of talk earlier about defending our dirt.
Yeah.
Three straight chances in a row here to defend your dirt.
Yes.
That's got to feel pretty good.
Yeah, it's pretty good. You know, we got three straight weeks. And, you know, this Buffalo crowd, these Buffalo fans, mm-hmm. they take pride and they take heart in, you know, coming to these games and, you know, giving us that inspiration, that juice. Like we say a lot around the locker room, that juice, you know, to give that feeling that, you know, it's hard to play here, especially when it's cold, it's snowing, the wind's blowing, that ice is chipping at your face, burning. Mm-hmm. So, so
these are good things, right?
It's good things.
Okay.
Good things for us, bad things for our opponents. Yeah. You know, coming here, and that's one thing, you know, that's another thing Coach McDermott preached. You know, we have to defend our dirt, you know. You know, last game, the last home game we had didn't work out so well, but, you know, we have three games left at home. We're going to, you know, defend our dirt and bring it home.
You know, what feels different about this season? I mean, you guys obviously are in a different position
yeah.
than last year's team was, but last year, towards the end of the season, you did still have a shot to get into the playoffs, right? This year, you can kind of, I don't want to say control your own destiny because you're still trying to battle some things out with Baltimore, but you do, if you handle business, you know, you can probably get yourselves into the playoffs. With three home games, last year you had a couple games in December as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, at home. Three home games this year. What feels different about this year versus last year's team?
It's a lot. It's just it's a different vibe. None taken from the coach staff last year. It's just a different vibe that Coach McDermott brings is that attitude, that intensity that he has about himself. You know,
mm-hmm.
He might be small in stature, but he has a heart of a lion, man. He might kill me if he sees this statement, but
it's all good. I don't want to say you insulted him, but you had your shot, and then backed that up with something good.
The passion he brings every single day. It's like that guy doesn't have a bad day. The passion that he brings every single day, every morning, you know, to give us that inspiration. You know, who wouldn't want to play for this guy?
Right.
And it's different, you know, that we control our own destiny. We can't worry about what Baltimore does. We have to worry about what we do every single game and finish it out strong.
You know, we see him clapping on TV a lot.
Yeah.
Does he do that in practice as well?
Oh yeah. Yeah, he that same, you know, he's doing that every single day in the meeting room, practice, and, you know, he's always yelling, man, we gotta get some juice, man, and clapping and, you know, pumping guys in the chest, slapping them on the shoulders and the helmet and getting guys fired up. And, you know, you see him throughout practice, you know, some coaches might be standing there just watching, and he's stretching with us, talking with us, you know, getting us going. And, that, you know, to have a coach like that is special.
I'm sure once in a while he is, you know, critical and, you know, criticizing players. But I don't think I've ever seen it. If he does, he doesn't do it publicly or at practice or at training camp. All of the feedback he seems to give you guys, you players, seems to be positive. You mentioned clapping every time you come off the field.
Yeah, and he criticizes us, and you know he has that respect for us that you know we're grown men, and you know what needs to be handled behind doors is handled behind doors, and he doesn't need to, you know, rip us a new one, you know, for everybody to see. You know, he shows us that respect. Now, you know, if you see him do it, he has to be really, really, really angry. But he's cool under pressure. You know, you see him calm. When he's not clapping, he's one of the calmest guys you ever see on the sideline. So, you know, he handles whatever he needs to handle with us. He handles, pulls us to the side or tells us in practice. But, you know, everything is positive with him. And even when he always says, even when we lose, it's not a loss, it's a lesson. And, you know, that's the first time I ever heard a coach say that. You know, it's not a loss, it's a lesson. We learn from this and we move on and get better from it.
All right, Sunday, Bills, Patriots, Jordan and several teammates who will be participating in the league's My Cause, My 16s. Cleats campaign. And these shoes, these spectacular
wides.
Shoes. 16, size 16.
Oh, man.
Are they wides?
No, they're not wide.
Okay.
They don't need to be.
My Cause, My Cleats campaign is this Sunday all over the league, including here at New Era Field. Jordan, thanks for coming by. We appreciate it.
No problem.
Jordan Mills, Bills offensive lineman. We're back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. Our thanks to Jordan Mills. A little pop-in visit from Jordan Mills. Hey, coming up next Monday, December 4th, it's a One Buffalo Community Drive, blood drive for units coming up at the Key Bank Center and the Lexus Club inside the Key Bank Center. Next Monday, 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., every donor gets a pair of One Buffalo gloves. There will be appearances from Sabres and Bills alumni, mascot appearances. If you can't make it to the arena, interested donors can go to any unit's neighborhood blood donation center from Monday, next Monday, to December 9th to donate and get a free pair of gloves. Walk-ins welcome, but you can also schedule your appointment at units.org. So it's next Monday at the Key Bank Center at the Lexus Club inside the Key Bank Center from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m., the One Buffalo Community Blood Drive to benefit units, upstate New York Transplant Services. A little pop-in from Jordan Mills. You would have gone crazy if they had that My Cause, My Cleats thing when you were playing, right? You would have spent months designing your...
I would have.
Yeah.
It would have been for various causes, but especially kidney disease, obviously with me having kidney disease. No one knew that I had kidney disease except for... You know, people, the medical staff here. But, yeah, I would have done that. I mean, there are so many different things that I could have done coming from where I come from and seeing the things that I've seen. I would have definitely had fun. Stevie would have had a lot of fun. Now, Stevie might have, you know, went a little bit overboard.
You think?
And put
why
something.
So
you know, he would have had his, exactly, somewhere he would slide that in there. Why so serious? Like a Joker face.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Did you ever discuss that with him? Why did he get hung up on that Batman, why so serious thing?
He loved the movie, The Dark Knight.
Great movie.
Yeah, it was a great, I mean, Heath Ledger did a great job on that movie. He loved that movie. He would watch it all the time. And I don't know, you know, what made him do it one day, you know, the Cincinnati game. I don't know what made him do it that day. We didn't talk about it. But, you know, once it took off the way it did, it was like, oh, man, the Joker. He really loved the Joker.
Right.
That was his thing. You
right.
know, and in that movie, Heath Ledger did a great job of playing the Joker. And so he always wanted to, like, paint his face and do the whole Joker face, and that's what he started doing for games.
How about I think you were on the team when he did it on, what, New Year's Day in New England in Foxborough, and he had Happy New Year's on his T-shirt?
Yeah, I was on the team.
What was he thinking?
I'm telling you, look, Stevie would come to me, and he would say,
there was a penalty then.
Yeah, it was.
And he got benched.
Yeah, it's just like when he decided to act like he shot himself, like Plexico Burris. He would tell me all of these things.
I forgot about that.
He told me, like, hey, I think I'm gonna shoot myself like Plexico Burris. And I'm like, dude, don't do that. That is not good. You know? And he just, you know, Steve kind of walks to his own beat. And even if you give him advice, he's like, all right, I hear you, but at the end of the day, he's gonna do it anyway.
That was in the heyday of the No Fun League when they were throwing flags for
everything.
Yeah. I'm surprised he didn't come back and play this year. just for the celebrations. You know, I don't really have it anymore. I don't know if I can help a team, but darn, I'd like to get back there and celebrate.
I mean, yeah.
Right? He's that kind of guy.
We would have had a lot of fun.
Right.
In today's NFL with the celebrations and stuff, because we were trying to plan things then. When nobody was really trying to plan things, we were, hey, how can we do this without getting a flag, you know? And how can we – because back then you couldn't really celebrate. Two guys couldn't do it together. You know, now you can. We would have had a lot of fun this year.
It's. We talked about this yesterday a little bit. We were watching ESPN in the office. I'm not anti-celebration, but it's gone a little bit over the top, Donald.
I love it.
Because it's taken so long, and it's all choreographed. And the Chiefs the other day are losing in a critical game, and yet – and yet Albert Wilson had time to choreograph his little celebration at the end. You know what I mean?
That is – I mean, they weren't getting blown out.
No, but they're losing.
But
they're up against it.
There's like an unwritten rule. At least Stevie and I had an unwritten rule where it was like you don't do a celebration if you're losing like that. You know, like you just hand the ball to the official. Get back to the sidelines.
Yeah.
If you're losing – now, if you start winning, then you can do something, you know. Especially it was if you're losing – and it was the preseason as well. You know, like, you know, it's what do you need to celebrate in the preseason for? This doesn't even count,
right?
You know?
Why waste your celebration?
Right, exactly. Like, save that for the regular season. So that was the unwritten rule. But I love the celebrations. I love to see the Chiefs doing what they're doing. I love to see the Eagles. Those guys are having fun out in Philadelphia with
their
celebrations.
They probably lead the league in
celebrations. Yeah, I think the Eagles,
wins,
Chiefs, that too. And the Steelers.
Yeah.
The Steelers do a lot of celebrations with Juju Smith-Schuster.
Yeah.
I think that's how you pronounce his name.
I mean, leapfrog.
Yeah. It's funny. The potato sack races.
Come on.
I think, and you talked about this yesterday, the one that you did like was, I think his name is Robbie Anderson. From the Jets, wide receiver, when he lay down and took a nap on the ball.
That was kind of funny.
Yeah,
they're all pretty
good.
Funny. They're all pretty funny. I'm not anti-celebration. You're going to try to paint me in that corner.
No.
You're going to try to put me in that old guy you hate celebrating. I don't. But I think they take a little bit too long.
I mean, you know, the interesting thing is when they show the celebrations, I'm watching the ref as well. You know, because I want to see the ref's face. And sometimes you'll see the ref smiling, and then you'll see other refs like, hey, come on. Let's go. Move it along, you know, but I'm enjoying it, man. I think the fans are enjoying it as well.
There's probably going to be a tweak to the rule this offseason. Can't you see it?
Yeah.
Where, you know, typical NFL will probably put a celebration clock up, you know, right next to the play clock. You have 15 seconds to
sponsored
do your celebration.
Sponsored by Rolex.
Yeah, right? And if you don't get your celebration done in 15 seconds, flag goes out.
Yeah,
excessive
exactly.
Celebration.
Exactly.
That's the way the league solves stuff, you know. Yes. Just throw more rules on it. Throw more
it's crazy,
on.
Man. You opened it up. You know, it's not – and the crazy thing is the guys are doing celebrations. It might be taking long. That would be the only argument because you don't see really disrespectful type of celebrations this year, you know, like you did in the past.
They're not taunting.
Right. They're not doing any of that stuff. Those guys are just having fun in the end zone together.
John Hakes on this topic tweets in, I thought you might know the answer to this or maybe this is not correct. John Hakes tweets in, I thought Stevie's motivation for why so serious was that – T.O. had called himself an Ocho Cinco Batman and Robin earlier.
That was part of it.
I could be mistaken.
That was part of it. But Stevie truly loved the Joker. Like, he truly loved the Joker. He still loves the Joker. You know, that whole thing with T.O. and Ocho Cinco, we played them. Well, yeah, we were playing them that week, you know, in Cincinnati. And I remember talking to those guys before the game, all of us standing in midfield talking to each other. But Stevie truly, truly loved the Joker and wanted to do it for that reason.
Did he love the Joker before Heath Ledger's Joker? Did he like the earlier?
No, I think Heath Ledger's Joker is the one the best one to me.
Yeah.
The best Batman movie.
Yeah, first one was good. But that one was good, too.
Yeah, I think Heath Ledger he did a crazy part in that movie.
It was scary. It was really scary. I don't know how we got on that tangent. It was a good one. We're going to talk with Trey Wingo from ESPN at 1 o'clock. Going to talk with Steve Tasker at 2. Donald's got his breakdown of nuts and bolts coming up at 1:30. Our Twitter poll today, how many wins do you see the Bills getting in their final five games? Only five games left are in the final third of the season. How many wins are left in this Bills team? That's our Twitter poll. 79% of you, almost 80%, say there's two or three more wins out of the remaining five. 13% of you say four or five more wins. 8% of you say zero or one. I think it's pretty obvious based on the results. I do think it's going to be a couple of wins, two or three. Four or five would be great. I don't know if that's going to happen. 0-1, I don't think that's going to happen either, Donald. I think they've demonstrated there's, as Jordan Mills said, they still have some juice, this team, right? They still do.
They still have some juice. I see 2-3. I'm in the majority of this of this Twitter poll, I can see 2 to 3 wins right now. They would have to steal one to get to – I can see 3. They would have to steal one to get to 4. You know, they need to beat the Patriots once. And I'm sorry, but if you want to be a playoff team, you got to beat the best teams, you know, and that is the Patriots right now. So they are on your schedule next. They are here in Buffalo. You need to beat them here in Buffalo, then beat the Colts, then beat Miami. Go on a run right now, you know, like a 4-game run. And then that's what really sets you up to get into the playoffs. And people talk about, oh, they're backpedaling into the playoffs. How you get there is how you get there.
Right.
But you do want to be a team with some momentum going into the playoffs.
They backpedal into the playoffs.
I don't care.
I don't
either. If you get in, how you get in.
Full sprint backpedal.
Yeah, you just want to get into the tournament, you know. But as a team, you do want some momentum, feeling good about yourselves. Yeah. I remember talking to, who was it, Steve Spagnuolo? No. Who was the defensive coordinator or offensive coordinator for the Giants when they won the Super Bowl?
Kevin Gilbride.
Yeah, so we had him on the show.
Yeah.
I can't remember when. In the offseason, we had him on the show, and he was talking about that year they beat the Patriots, I think whatever year it was where the Patriots went on that crazy run. That was like 2007 or something like that.
Yeah.
When they were in they lost in the Super Bowl to the Giants.
Right, 07, I believe.
Yeah, they were undefeated, lost in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
So they that last game of the season, he said, they came out of that game, even though the Patriots beat them, they came out feeling like we can play with that team.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what helped them and propelled them once they got into the Super Bowl to beat the Patriots, you know. So the Bills need to go on a run like that where you win some games and start feeling good about yourselves. You know, you don't need to be up and down, up and down, up and down, because at that point you're unsure about yourselves. No matter what they say, you're unsure about, all right, going into this game, how are we going to be? If you get on a real run here, you beat the Patriots here at home, and then you're talking about the Colts, you're talking about the Dolphins, you're going to feel real good about yourself. You can blow those teams out, but it starts with this game this week.
Yeah. Big game. Have we said that? We're going to talk about it with Trey Wingo from ESPN, the host of ESPN's NFL Live and the co-host of the new ESPN show, Golic and Wingo, on mornings, weekday mornings. Trey Wingo coming up when we return. We're back with more of the John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Buffalo Bills Radio Network. Sports Update.
The update from One Bills Drive, the calm before the storm for the Bills. Players off today. The coaching staff working on the game plan for this weekend's game against the first-place New England Patriots. First game against the Patriots this year for Buffalo. The Bills will see them again in 3 weeks when they travel to Foxborough on Christmas Eve. Head coach Sean McDermott says wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin is day-to-day with a knee injury he suffered a week and a half ago against the Chargers. The Bills say it is a meniscus tear for Benjamin, who did not practice at all this week. Team returns to practice tomorrow. Matchup with the Patriots coming up Sunday, 1 o'clock at New Era Field. Patriots quarterback Tom Brady acknowledges that he was a little sore after taking 8 hits in the New England win over the Dolphins last Sunday. The physical game and the battering he has taken has once again sparked talk about limiting the hits on Tom Brady. He is 40 years old. In early October, it was one of the hot-button topics in the NFL, but it has calmed down since, and Brady is on pace to take the same amount of hits he took over the last 5 years. Patriots running back Mike Gillisley, the former Buffalo Bill running back, has been a healthy scratch for 3 consecutive games for New England. He slipped to number 4 on their running back depth chart. Last night, the Houston Texans did not do the Bills any favors as the Baltimore Ravens beat the Texans in Monday Night Football 23-16 despite a sloppy performance by Baltimore. They still now have the 6th seed and the final playoff seed in the AFC with the win yesterday. Broncos cornerback Aqib Talib and Oakland wide receiver Michael Crabtree have each been suspended for 2 games after they were ejected from Sunday's game for fighting. Both players say they plan to appeal the suspension. Cleveland Browns getting set to bring Josh Gordon back in the lineup. Hugh Jackson, Browns coach, says he's going to play him. Says, I got big plans for him. I plan him to play and play as much as he can handle. Sam Darnold, USC quarterback, denies a rumor that he might stay at USC for his junior season if the Browns end up with a first pick in the 2018 draft. And the Buffalo Sabres take on Tampa Bay tonight. KeyBank Center, that's a 7 o'clock faceoff. Welcome back. Hour 2 of the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. John Murphy, Donald Jones in our One Buffalo studio. And joining us on the line for his usual Tuesday spot with us, he is the host of ESPN's NFL Live and the co-host of the new Golic and Wingo show on ESPN. Happy to have Trey Wingo with us. Trey, John Murphy and Donald here. Thanks for joining us today.
True friend of the crown here, guys. Dilly Dilly. How are we?
Dilly Dilly.
Yeah. You are a big friend of Bills fans. You are one of the few, the chosen few, who actually predicted the Buffalo Bills knocking off Kansas City this past Sunday. You are celebrated here in Bills country these days, Drake.
Yeah, this week. We'll see what happens next week. look, it just, you know, it just seemed like the right thing at the time. I mean, they tried the Peterman experiment. It went afoul. They were catching Kansas City at the right time. And they needed to make a stand after those three straight losses. And, you know, as much as it was the turnaround to Tyrod Taylor, who knew that turning to Tyrod Taylor, the Bills would find their defense? Because that really was the difference in that game, as they you know, a Kansas City squad that had, you know, just not been right since the first five games of the year. And Buffalo really clamped it down and did a great job on defense there.
Hey, Trey, and I know we want to talk about the Bills here, obviously, but what is going on in Kansas City? I mean, they started off so hot. What has happened as of late?
Well, it's pretty simple. It is all about run production, okay? And you look at what they were able to do, Donald, those first five games of the year. Kareem Hunt, the rookie out of Toledo, was averaging 122 yards a game, and he had 6.3 yards a carry. Since that time, he's had about 46 yards a game and averages about 3 yards a carry. They have not been able to run the ball. All the little gimmick plays, Donald, that they like to do seem to be things that were sort of people sort of caught up to. But all that's predicated on the run. If they can't block and they can't run, they won't be able to throw the ball down the field. And I thought one play in the Buffalo Bills game really signified the struggles of the Chiefs' offense. It was one of the first five three and outs that they had in that game for Kansas City, where they threw it, Alex Smith threw it to a spot where both Albert Wilson and Tyreek Hill were the same player on the same spot on that screen on third down. And it just showed you how out of sync everything on that offense was. There was only supposed to be one receiver there. Instead, there were two. They battled each other for the ball, and it just fell harmlessly to the ground.
And what does that signify? I mean, how can they be this deep into the season with a veteran quarterback and one of the supposedly great play callers in the NFL and have a play like that, Trey? That doesn't add up for them, does it?
No, it doesn't, and it doesn't make sense to me. That one was unusual. As far as I was concerned. There are a million things that are going wrong. You know, it's easy to say, oh, it's time to turn the quarter page and put on Patrick Mahomes. But I promise you, as strong as Patrick Mahomes' arm is, he's not ready to sort of delve into an NFL offense. He can make all the throws, but, you know, he's a lot like Brett Favre when he first came in. He's very raw. And if you can't run, you can't block very well, the last thing you want is to put Mahomes back there behind that line and take a beating. So there's a lot of things that are really out of sync right now in Kansas City. And the amazing thing, guys, is the only team in the history of the NFL to ever start the season 0-4 and make the playoffs was the 92 Chargers. And it may be the fact that this Chargers team, who also started 0-4 and is now 5-6, and just one game back of the Chiefs, may find a way to sneak back in there as the AFC West champs with the way that division is going.
Pretty crazy. Let's get you talking about the Bills for a second, Trey. Trey Wingo, our guest, the host of ESPN's NFL Live and the new co-host of Golic and Wingo, which is weekdays 6 a.m., 10 a.m. on ESPN Radio and ESPN2. It was a return to form for the Buffalo defense, and it was a rough 3 weeks for that Buffalo defense, but a lot of us are very encouraged by what we saw against Kansas City. Was it a function of Buffalo playing better, or was it the Chiefs' meltdown, the offensive meltdown we just talked about?
Well, it was definitely both. Definitely a little bit of both. As we chronicled, the Kansas City offense is out of sync. But, you know, Buffalo stepped up and made plays, and they got two huge turnovers in that game. You know, one of the turnovers, I thought Alex Smith had somebody wide open when he tried to force it to Tyreek Hill. He just made the wrong throw there, and the Bills were able to make the play. But the other play on Tre'Davious White, man, he was one of my favorite players in the draft. And the break he made on that ball to seal that win was just a spectacular play. And when that defense was right, guys, you know, when they took care of the Raiders and other people, they were getting turnovers. And turnovers sometimes are like bananas. They tend to come in bunches, and then they just go away. And those turnovers had gone away for a few weeks. But they got some big turnovers against Kansas City, and especially an offense that had been struggling. When you can take the ball away a couple of times, suddenly you feel a lot better about yourself, and that's exactly what happened.
Now, Trey, there was a lot of talk, especially nationally, obviously here in Buffalo, when the Bills decided to switch quarterbacks a couple weeks ago and go with Nate Peterman. They switched back to Tyrod Taylor. Did he show you anything in this game that says Tyrod Taylor should be your guy moving forward?
You know, he showed me that all year, and it's not that he's lit the world on fire. I want to be clear about that. No one's comparing him to Tom Brady or Drew Brees or what Jared Goff is doing or what Carson Wentz is doing, but he's done enough. I mean, the weird part for me was they made this switch when they were in the middle of having this horrendous stretch of not being able to stop anybody on defense, whether it was against the Jets on the Thursday night and after the Saints game, and obviously what happened against the Chargers, especially in that first half. To me, watching him play and being able to avoid the rush, especially against the Chargers, who had those two outstanding rushers in Engram and Bosa, it just made all the sense in the world that you wanted the most mobile guy back there. And again, against Kansas City, when you saw some of the pressure getting back to him, he was able to escape, reset, and make some throws. I mean, Zay Jones had a touchdown and made a couple of catches in that game, I think, in a large part, directly attributable to the mobility of Tyrod Taylor. So it's not a knock on what Nathan Peterman can be, and it's not saying what Tyrod isn't. I'm just saying what he is and how he can function. To me, it's not even close that he's the best player at that position to give the Bills a chance to win every week.
Barry Wingo on the line with us as we recap the week in the NFL that just ended. Ended with a game that many folks in Buffalo last night hoped would go the other way. The Houston Texans unable to get past kind of a sloppy performance by the Baltimore Ravens. The Ravens, like the Bills, I think, Trey, are kind of, you know, really flawed, but also, like the Bills, might wind up in the AFC playoffs.
Yeah, right now they're in the one spot ahead of you based on conference records, I think. That's why they're six and you're seven right now. You know, they're really interesting. I mean, they're winning ugly, and it's basically about their defense. And, you know, for all the people that are getting on Tyrod, he's playing a hell of a lot better than Joe Flacco right now. I can promise you that. You know, Joe Flacco, I think he had 140-plus yards last night on 30-plus attempts. I mean, wow. That's really a low amount of yards for that number of throws. Now, he made the big run, the 25-yard run, to seal the win down the stretch, and then the defense got the turnover late to end it. But, you know, Joe Flacco is making a ton more money than Tyrod Taylor and being far less productive at the quarterback position. That defense has thrown three shutouts this year. If they're going to win, they're going to have to win ugly, take the ball away, and just manage some points on offense. But they've done that before, the Ravens successfully, going on to win Super Bowl 47, and suddenly Flacco caught fire. So, you know, if you can just find your way in, all things are possible, and that's sort of the issue with Buffalo and the issue with Baltimore right now. Lots of flaws on both sides, but just get in there and see what happens.
You know, Trey, since we're talking about playoffs, I want to talk about another team that blasted the Bills a couple weeks ago, and that's the Chargers. And they look like a team that wants to truly win the AFC West out there after starting off so bad. What do you think about the Chargers? Are they a team that really has some playoff hopes?
Yeah, I do. I mean, it's an amazing thing, guys, because we sort of went through the first four, five, even 6 weeks of the season, and we found just the incredible ways that the Chargers found to lose games, whether it was the Monday night opener against Denver when they had a chance to tie it and send it to overtime and the kick was blocked, and then some of the fiascos when Philadelphia went out there, and the Jacksonville, the final 2 minutes of the Jacksonville Chargers game might be a clinic on how not to win games by both teams, yet someone found a way to win. So Chargers fans have seen just excruciatingly awful play and weird ways to win games, but here they are. And Phillip Rivers, I think, threw for 4,700 yards on Thursday against the against the Dallas Cowboys. Keenan Allen looked like Jerry Rice,
yeah.
And they bottled up that Cowboys offense without Zeke in there and made a ton of plays on defense. Look, they started 0-4 in a division where the team that they were against was 5-0, and now they're one game out of first, and they are rolling, and the Kansas City Chiefs are reeling. It's really quite remarkable.
The best-case scenario for the Bills, Trey, it would seem, is for the Chargers to go ahead and win the West because the Bills own tiebreakers against the rest of them, against Denver, Oakland, and now Kansas City, right?
That's exactly right. And I think that, you know, if you're the Chargers, you have to think that's feasible. When they won, got into the playoffs in 92 after an 0-4, they got in as a wild card. Their best route right now is to go and win that division, and that is very, very doable for them, which would absolutely open up the road for the Buffalo Bills to get in.
Now, we got to stay out there in the AFC West and talk to you a little bit about this Crabtree and Aqib Talib fight that happened. Both those guys suspended two games. It was just a wild day, a wild incident that happened out there.
Yeah, and, you know, you knew it was coming because this happened last year. Adam Schefter had the tweet of the year, by the way, which it sort of indicated that everybody knew it was coming. He said, Michael Crabtree knew that Aqib Talib was going to go after his chain again, so he taped it to his body and Tlaib still got it. I mean, that is a thing of beauty in less than 280 characters. And it sums up the bad blood between these guys. And, you know, it got worse when it was almost 3 minutes into the game when that happened. And, you know, Crabtree punched Chris Harris before that, and that set Tlaib off. And, look, I get it. There's bad blood. But both of those guys took it so far. You know, two-game suspension for something like that is really unusual. There's no official record of multiple-game suspensions in the NFL that's kept, but there's a website, I think it's called Football Zebras, that does sort of chronicle this stuff. And there have only been seven multi-game suspensions since 1920, according to that website, about things that happened during a game. We're not talking about drug or alcohol abuse issues or player conduct suspensions, but things that happened during the game. Only seven times have there been things that involved multiple games in that suspension, and it happened to two of them twice. Now, they both appealed it, and that appeal will be heard, I think, at 6 o'clock tonight, and they should know pretty soon whether or not they'll be reduced. But that shows you just how out of the ordinary it was and how out of the ordinary the NFL thought those actions were to bring a multiple-game suspension.
Two games seems like a lot until you look at the video of the fight.
Yeah.
And you know, don't you agree? And then you're like, you can't have that. You can't have teams out of control like that.
Totally agree. And the amazing thing to me, and I think the officials might have realized we have to play a game here, was that only three people got pulled out of that game. Only three people were ejected. The two main combatants there, and then Gabe Jackson, who trying to run in for the Raiders, pushed an official to the ground. So, yeah, the fact that, you know, you saw Donald Penn square up, you saw a bunch of stuff go in there, and it was crazy. And, you know, I get it that, you know, on one sense, I guess, Akib is trying to protect his teammate, but at the end of the day, by taking it that far, you're also not respecting who you're playing with and who you're playing for. And I think both of those things sort of attributed to those fines and suspensions.
You know, Trey, it's crazy because we've seen a lot of really star players in this league have these incidents this year, you know, like big-time fights during the course of a game and be suspended for it. I don't know what the deal is this year in the league, but it's starting to become a trend.
Well, we saw it also. That's twice it's happened in Oakland. Remember Marcus Peters and Marshawn Lynch got into it in that game. Yeah, you know, it is. And you know, Lewis Riddick, who works for us, said, you know, it's sort of that look-at-me mentality and, you know, doing one-upmanship and trying to post something funny on Instagram or Twitter. And I don't know if it goes that far, but it does seem to be a lack of, hey, you know, we're in this together. You know, we've talked about this before on this show. Football is the most team-oriented sport there is. It is the most, I'm going to do my job so you can do your job. And when you see things like that, that part gets taken away from it. And that, as a fan of the game, is what bothers me.
On the line with Trey Wingo, the host of ESPN's NFL Live. Of course, the Bills have their sights set on New England this coming Sunday, Trey. Patriots win again. They've won seven in a row. They're doing it offensively because as much as the narrative earlier this year was the Patriots' defense is in trouble, and you look at the numbers, the defense is still in trouble, but they just outscore people apparently, huh?
Yeah, and you know they've gotten better. I mean, those first 2 weeks, first 3 weeks, 4 weeks of the season, that defense really wasn't stopping anybody. They're getting more consistent in making their stops. But you're right, nobody has yet to quite figure out the Patriots' offense. I mean, look, they ran for 196 yards on Sunday over the Dolphins. Tom Brady looked extremely average in that game, and all they had to do is go pound the rock, and that 196, I think, was 34 yards more than their previous high on the day, and they averaged 5.3 a carry or 5.2 a carry, which was also their season high. So, you know, Bill Belichick likes to say this about his teams, guys, we can win a lot of different ways, and they're beginning to round into that team again. You know, you can take away Tom Brady, and they gash you on the ground, or you can try and stop the run, and then Tom Brady will cut you up. So, they are always going to be very problematic. The only team I think that really has a chance in terms of like getting to the Super Bowl in the AFC without massive injuries, and they still had massive injuries and it doesn't matter, might be Pittsburgh. In Week 15, the Patriots go to Pittsburgh, and that game could decide home field advantage for the AFC when it's all said and done.
I thought the Steelers were game the other day. I mean, they were getting a pretty good game from Green Bay, and the Steelers still found a way to win it at the end, which is impressive, you know, even with the Packers compromised as they are without their quarterback.
It was, and Hundley played great. You know, there were a couple of blown coverages, obviously, for the Steelers that allowed a couple of big touchdowns in that one. But they turned the ball over three times in that game, and I think that really was why that was a game. Now, they can't do that against New England if they're going to play them. You have to play a clean football game to try and beat them. So I think that if Pittsburgh wants to be honest about them about this, they have to say to themselves, look, we need to play our best game, and we need to play our cleanest game if we're going to have a chance to beat the Patriots. They played in Pittsburgh last year, but remember, Ben was hurt, and Landry Jones started that game. And then in the AFC Championship game in Foxborough, when Ben was healthy, Le'Veon Bell, who'd gone two straight games in the playoffs, breaking the Steelers' franchise rushing record for most yards on the ground in a playoff game, injured his groin in the first quarter, and that really was the game as far as anyone was concerned. They need to be healthy, and they need to play a clean game if they're going to have a chance to beat the Patriots.
You know, Martavis Bryant, I guess about a month ago, really wanted out of Pittsburgh. Is that whole thing done? I mean, he's playing now. He's making plays for them. You feel like that whole thing is done with Martavis Bryant?
Well, he's not going anywhere. And you know, it's done for this year. And now, you know, Juju Smith-Schuster's a little banged up, which opens up a spot for more playing time for Martavis. I do think going down the road, they like Juju Smith better, and I think that he's going to be getting most of those reps that that Martavis had earlier in the years as part of the Killer Bees. So I guess that'll be the Juju Bees for those of us that like the old candy that you used to get at the movies. I think that right now it's perfect for Martavis, but I do think the way things are looking past 2017, I think that Juju Smith-Schuster is going to be a bigger part of the offense, and Martavis might be, you know, a player that they can get something for in the offseason and try and shore something else up.
Hey, Trey, there's one more AFC situation I want to ask you about, and that's the AFC South, where you've got Tennessee and Jacksonville, both 7-4. They'll play each other in the final week of the season. How do you think that will shake out, and why do I have trouble taking either one of those teams real seriously as a potential Super Bowl contender?
Well, you know, Jacksonville hasn't been in the playoffs since 2007, I think. So that's why, you know, you're not thinking about them in that vein. And they, you know, they lost a tough one this past Sunday in Arizona the way you expect them to lose games. I mean, they kept themselves in it, and lo and behold, what happens? Blaine Gabbert makes the turnover late in the game, which allows Phil Dawson to go kick the longest field goal of his career, and he's been in the league 19 years, to win that game for Arizona. And look, Marcus Mariota has played really well at times, but he also has thrown six interceptions in his last two games. He tossed up four in the Thursday night loss to Pittsburgh the week before Thanksgiving, and then he had two in the game against Indianapolis. And if he's going to do that, if he's going to average multiple turnovers or multiple interceptions in a game, as much as, you know, they like to run the ball and play good defense, that's not going to work either. So that's why you don't really want to trust either one of those guys or one of those teams right now, because we haven't seen it from Jacksonville. I mean, let's be honest. Doug Marrone has gone out of his way and said, I'm trying to win without my quarterback throwing as many passes as possible, which means he doesn't have a lot of confidence in what he's going to do and what he's going to see out of him. So that's one reason why you don't have a lot of faith in that team. And if Marcus can stop turning it over, you think the Titans have a chance. But you're right, there's not a lot from recent memory on either teams that say, if we're talking about going up against the Steelers or going up against a surging Chargers team or, of course, the right. Patriots, yeah, these are the teams that may be able to slay those dragons when everything's on the line.
You know, Trey, last question I have for you, and this one is about the Lions. Detroit, you know, trying to battle and get into the playoffs, do they have a shot? Do you think they have enough on that team? And the reason I'm asking is because they do play Baltimore this week coming up.
Yeah. Look, I do think that they have to find a more consistent running game. There have been games this year when they've been able to run the ball very well, and games this year where it has to be, okay, Matthew Stafford, go out there and make some plays. And that, you know, if they can find more balance, I think they have a chance to get into the postseason. And I think Stafford, you know, people want to give him grief for the contract, and that's fine. But, you know, here's the way it works in the NFL. When you're a premier quarterback, and I do think Matthew Stafford is a top 10 quarterback in the NFL, maybe even higher than that, you are going to get the money. That's just the economics of the situation. You deserve what you can get, so he got that contract based on how he played. If they need to find more balance on offense. If they can find some semblance of a running game down the stretch of the year, which we've seen happen before, then I think they can get into the postseason and maybe shock somebody in there, because when Stafford gets hot, man, he's as good as anybody there is.
with Trey Wingo, the host of ESPN's NFL Live and the co-host of Golic and Wingo, the brand-new show just premiered yesterday, weekday 6 a.m., 10 a.m. on ESPN Radio, ESPN2. Getting great reviews for the first couple of shows, Trey. How do you like it?
Well, I'm glad because I tend to fall asleep right after the show. So no, it's great. Golic and I go way back, so it's a lot of fun. We did the first ever NFL Live together, so that's made it really easy. There's no awkward, hey, what do you want to talk about or what do you want to talk about it? So that makes it a lot of fun. We're glad people enjoy it. We're trying to start people's day with a smile on their face and talk about sports.
And I read somewhere you tweeted out, right? I'm not a morning person. What are you doing on the morning radio if you're not a morning person?
Well, you know, things change. So I'm just trying to roll with the tide here.
Hey, good luck with the show. I know it started out great. We thank you for joining us again on Tuesday this week. Trey, thanks. Good luck.
You got it, guys. Always a pleasure.
Okay, Trey Wingo, the host of ESPN's NFL Live and the co-host of Golic and Wingo, weekdays 6 a.m. to 10 a.m., ESPN Radio, ESPN2, and streaming live on the ESPN app. You guys were watching it the other day, right? Weren't you in the office?
Yes, I was watching
it. It's good, right?
It is a good show. He's good, and Golic is good as well. I've seen some things. They were, like, in a car somewhere driving around, and they were recording them. They do some crazy things. Yeah. Over at ESPN.
I got to make sure I catch that. All right, great. Thanks, Trey Wingo. Always good to hear. It's a great way to wrap up the week. You know how Greg Cosell on Friday with us sets up the upcoming weekend? Mm-hmm. I always feel like Trey Wingo on Tuesdays captures what went on this past week.
Oh, what went on this past week. So we're just ending this.
Boom. Okay. Right there. Gotcha. It's over. For Donald's deep dive into some of the good plays from the Bills in Sunday's game. We've got nuts and bolts coming up with Donald Jones breaking down some of the big plays for the Bills in their win over the Chiefs, and that's coming up. The John Murphy Show presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back. John Murphy, Donald Jones, live at One Bills Drive. We are midway through the show. If you've just joined us, you missed Jordan Mills, who joined us in the first hour of the show to talk about his My Cleats, My Cause, and about the Bills, how they're playing on offense. Jordan Mills, Bills offensive tackle. Trey Wingo just wrapped up with him from ESPN and the co-host of Golic and Wingo on ESPN Radio, ESPN2. If you missed those segments, you can pick them up online at buffalobills.com. We'll have them up for you a little bit later on in the day. And coming up at 2 o'clock, Steve Tasker. The great Bills special teams ace, Wall of Famer from the NFL on CBS, Steve Tasker, joining us at 2 o'clock today. Let's do it now. Let's revisit what we're talking about on Twitter as we take a breath, catch our breath, talk about where the Bills are at with five games to go. Five games left. The Twitter poll today deals with where they go from here. How many wins do you see the Buffalo Bills getting in these final five games? We've had the Twitter poll up for an hour and a half or so, more than 1,000 votes cast. 79% of you say the Bills are going to get two or three more wins, which gets you to 8 or 9, right? Is my math right? Yeah. 13% say you see the Bills winning 4 or 5 more games, which gets you to 10 or 11. And only 8% say 0 or 1 more wins, which gets you to 6 or 7. What do you think? We'll take calls on that, 803-0550 and toll-free 1-888-550-2550 or via Twitter at John Murphy Show. How many more wins left in this five-game schedule remaining for the Buffalo Bills? Somebody suggested, why didn't you put 3 or 4 more wins? I don't know, because it's Twitter. You can't do everything. But what would that tell you? How would that – so if you see 3 or 4 wins in these remaining five schedules, you're talking about, a 9 or 10-win season? Yeah, that's one way to split it up.
Yeah.
What do you think?
That's what you're talking about, a 9 or 10-win season, but – you only get a certain amount of options, you know? I mean, we try.
Call us up. Let's discuss.
Yeah, we'll
discuss.
I don't know. I see. Can you see 3 or 4 wins there? Yeah, you can see 3 or 4. You can see 2 to 3. You can see any of them. I don't know.
Yeah. Just pick a way
one.
To get the discussion going.
Just
pick
do
one.
It.
Call us up. 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Every Tuesday, we do this every Tuesday. Donald Jones takes a deeper dive into some of the stuff going on in last Sunday's game. We call it Nuts and Bolts with Donald Jones. It is presented by Napa. Shop and save. Collect points every time you shop with Napa Rewards. The Bills win over the Kansas City Chiefs, Donald. A lot of interesting plays to look at. A lot of strategy going on, I think, in this game. And you want to talk to us about a couple of these games, including, you know, the Zay Jones touchdown, the only touchdown of the game for the Bills, which, I took a look at again a couple of times yesterday. And there was a lot going on there, including a good job by Tyrod Taylor to extend the play a little bit.
Yeah, it was a great job by Tyrod Taylor to extend the play. Now, the Bills, when you think back to the play, or if you have a chance to go back and look at, like, all, game pass, all 22 type of film, coaches film, the Bills, when they get into the red zone, they do a lot of bunch formations, you know, and then they also do a lot of crisscrossing down in the red zone. They like to get some rub action in the middle off the linebackers. They like to, you know, have guys running over routes, you know, shallow routes, have somebody coming into the flat. Sometimes you get somebody on a flag route. But they like to do a lot of crisscrossing once they get into the red zone. And on the Zay Jones play, what they did was that crisscross type of action. And they had Charles Clay. They had Zay Jones actually lined up to the right side of the field. They had Charles Clay start on the right and come in motion and get into a bunch formation on the left side. And what they had was they had Zay Jones come across on like an over type of route. They had, I believe it was Andre Holmes, who actually ran, like he tried to run some sort of like a rub route, you know, to rub off the linebackers to spring Zay Jones so that he would come open in the end zone. And then you had Jordan Matthews, who actually ran a flag route. And you had LeSean McCoy come off in the flat. Charles Clay, he actually ended up blocking. And with all of that action, once you get into the red zone, it's so tight that you need action like that. And somebody's going to get confused. Somebody's going to get picked. And that's exactly what happened. Somebody got picked a little bit. And what it did was it helped Zay Jones come open because you had three guys in the middle of the field. Somebody has to drop back into coverage. Nobody dropped back into coverage because somebody got picked on that play. And then next thing you know, Zay Jones coming over becomes wide open.
When you talk about it in the locker room or at the podium Sunday, Tyrod Taylor mentioned that he had three options, and Shady was his first. Jordan Matthews, who was deeper in the end zone, was his second. And the intermediate guy, Zay Jones, was the third option. Credit Tyrod for taking a look and looking at all three options, right, before he decided to pull the trigger.
Yeah, you know, and that's the beauty of what Tyrod can do, because Tyrod Taylor can he can buy a lot of time with his feet, you know, and if he does a good job of reading the entire field and buying time with his feet, somebody's going to come open, you know, but when that guy comes open, he has to pull the trigger, you know, and that's something that he did very well on that play. And we'll have to continue to watch him to see if he does that throughout the rest of the season. But, yeah, it's a good thing to hear him say he wasn't even my first read. He was, like, the last read. I feel like in the Atlanta game, they ran something similar to this. In the red zone, Jordan Matthews actually scored on that play. And Tyrod said he wasn't even my first read on that play, you know. So it just lets you know that he's reading the entire field, you know, to see who's coming open. It's just when you're reading it and that person comes open, you pull the trigger, you know, and he did a good job of buying time and getting it to Zay Jones with enough time to get his feet down and make that catch.
We talked about this next play. It's the nuts and bolts segment with Donald Jones. We talked about it yesterday, the weird sort of floater pass that Tyrod Taylor threw. It was completed to Charles Clay, the tight end. But Marcus Peters had a shot at it. We're wondering what happened there. Why would Tyrod throw that pass? What did you see there when you looked at it?
Yeah, and when you look at it, Marcus Peters is a different type of corner, right?
Kind of
and
a so, freelancer, maybe?
Yeah, he is a freelancer. And he's good enough where I believe Andy Reid kind of believes in him enough to just do what you want to do. And if you see something and you want to slouch off or slump off, fall back and make a play, then that's what you do. And what the Chiefs actually did on that play was Marcus Peters was lined up, you know, to the Bills' right, obviously, and he was in a cover. The defense was in a cover three. As you had the safety coming down, Marcus Peters' job is to cover a deep third, right, on that side of the field. And they were in a cover three, and he was dropping back, taking who was going deep. And I couldn't see who it was on film, but whoever it was, I believe it was Zay Jones, was actually running a go route. And his job is to cover that go route as you don't let somebody get deeper than you on a cover three. And so what happened was he was covering that go route like he's supposed to, but then when he saw Tyrod Taylor go to throw the ball to Charles Clay, who was coming over, let's rewind that back a little bit. As he saw Charles Clay coming over in a motion to the left side, Charles Clay ran like an over route, you know. You had the go route on that side. Marcus Peters actually just slouched off, you know. But I think Tyrod Taylor wasn't expecting for Marcus Peters to be there as he decided to slouch off. And so he threw the ball the way he normally throws the ball to Charles Clay. And what he normally does is he throws floaters. We had Kelvin Benjamin on the show. The first thing he said was, I like him. He throws those floaters out there. You like those floaters until you floated a little bit too much
yeah.
as a wide receiver. Yeah. And he threw a true floater out there. Marcus Peters, I believe, was shocked at how Tyrod Taylor threw that ball, you know. And I'm sure Charles Clay was praying that that ball came down. And Tyrod Taylor, I don't think he expected Marcus Peters to be there. But because he plays the way he does, he actually came back. And he actually came back and could have made a big play on the ball, but he didn't make a play on the ball. He just swiped at the ball, and Charles Clay came down with the ball. Charles Clay did a good job of catching it, going up the field, and picking up some extra yardage.
Pretty interesting play. And of course, the play of the game for Buffalo was Tre'Davious White's interception late fourth quarter. The Chiefs hustling, no timeouts, trying to get downfield for a touchdown. And it was a day-long struggle, obviously, for Alex Smith. This time, though, it appeared there seemed to be some miscommunication between Smith and his intended target on this play, right?
Yeah.
Smith and Hill.
Yeah, it was definitely some miscommunication on that play. But when I went back and looked at the play, it's hard to figure out what defense the Bills are in, you know. And this is what we talk about when, I mean, look, we're not playing the game right now. But if we're trying to figure out, and we're actually watching film, and we're trying to figure out what they were in, if you go back and watch the film, I would almost guarantee you won't be able to figure out what they're in. They were in on that play either. And that's the beauty of these defenses in the NFL. I couldn't tell if the Bills were in a cover two, like a two trap type of coverage. I couldn't tell if they were in a cover three, if they were in a quarters look. You know, you have a lot of different looks there. And I'm sure if we're confused watching the film, then Alex Smith is confused as well.
Yeah.
You know, as he's trying to figure out what are they in right now. The Bills did a good job of disguising what covers they were in. As the play, you know, started, obviously Tre'Davious White was on the right side. The safety started to come down, and that's where I got confused. I couldn't tell if he was in a two trap or if he's just coming down in a cover three or what that is. But he came down over top of the tight end, Travis Kelce. Yeah, he came down over him. Tre'Davious White, all he had to do was, you know, really the route play right into what he's playing. And Tre'Davious White, as he backed off in a cover three look, I believe it was a cover three look, all he had to do was jump that route. And if he jumped it and jumped it the right way, then he was going to actually, you know, pick that ball off. When Alex Smith threw the ball, I think he threw it to the outside. And that's where you talked about that confusion. When he threw that ball, the wide receiver ran a curl route. He was supposed to throw it to the inside. I guess if that was the route he's supposed to be running, but he threw it more to the outside. And Tre'Davious White, once he picked that ball off, he was going the other way with it, which he should have returned all the way, but that's another story.
But he did a good job. He should have knelt down with it.
Yeah, he could have knelt down with it, but he did a good job of picking it off and taking it all the way back.
You know what else Alex Smith could have done? It's funny, we broke down that play, the White touchdown on the Sean McDermott show yesterday when we were taping the show. He had Travis Kelce open.
Yeah.
Over the middle. And you watch Kelsey's reaction after the pick, and he just sort of spun around and threw his hands up and basically quit on the play, like, how did you miss me?
That's
a bad all-around play, whether it's you know, the receiver's fault or Alex Smith's fault, just a bad execution.
I think it could be bad execution on Alex Smith. It could be just good defensive disguise by the Bills defense, you know, as he's in his mind, he's thinking, okay, they're running this coverage, I'm going this way with the ball. I'm going to Tariq Hill on the outside, you know. But then the Bills do something else, and he was already confused. He already had it set in his mind. Alex Smith might not have actually read the defense.
Right.
He could have just read it pre-snap and decided pre-snap, I'm going this way with the ball, and didn't know that they were in a total different coverage, and the guy who he wanted to throw to wasn't going to be open, who was Tariq Hill.
Yeah,
the guy who he should have thrown the ball to ended up wide open. And when you have things like that, you get interceptions.
It's Nuts and Bolts presented by Napa. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Five games left for the Bills. How many wins in that five-game stretch? Let's take a call. Drew in Columbus has some thoughts on this. Drew, go ahead.
Hey, John. Don, how y'all doing today?
Great.
Good.
I had a couple points. The first one, I just wanted to say the rookie, Trey White, he has been stepping up tremendously. I mean, I understand he had a couple of learning curves, which is usual as a rookie, but him upgrading, taking over Gilmore's position, I'm, like, really, you know, stable and comfortable with him being over there with EJ Gaines on the other side. I feel like when we play the Patriots this week that we need to We need to, especially when they get down the red zone, just double Gronk. Take him out the picture. Don't even give Brady a chance to even look at him. And just make them throw up underneath and come down and make the tackles. I was watching their game that they played against Miami last week. They do a lot of post deep post routes with what's his name, Cook or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do a couple of deep route posts with him. So Poyer and Hyde need to be on top of them. I feel we could get more turnovers in the zone package if the linebackers drop back further in depth. You know what I mean? Where they can't, tight ends and receivers can't get behind them and underneath the safeties. If they drop back a little bit, if you look at that one game where they played against who was that? We played against when Brown dropped back and he tipped the ball to Hyde again.
Yeah. What do you do with Gronkowski? And we'll have a lot of time over the next 3 days to discuss this, but is Micah Hyde the best matchup for Gronkowski, you think, this week?
I believe so. You have to obviously do different things. You're not going to just match up Micah Hyde on Gronk every play and saying you have him one-on-one every play. You're going to do different things, just like they confused Alex Smith. You're going to try to do your best job at confusing Tom Brady. You know, he usually can read defenses, you know, if not better than anyone. He's right up there top two in the league in terms of reading a defense and deciding where he wants to go with the ball. And if that's not open, he'll go somewhere else, you know. So you have to do a bunch of different things, but I would think Micah Hyde is a guy who's always going to be covering Gronk, whether it's by himself or double team with somebody else.
We'll talk a lot more about that game moving forward. Want to get your thoughts on how many wins left in this season for the Buffalo Bills. We'll do that when we return. The John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts from One Bills Drive. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. Hey, Bills fans, thanks for voting for the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. The votes have been tallied. The votes have piled in. This week's winner is Tre'Davious White with the game-saving interception. 58% of you voted Trey White as the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week. 19% voted Stephen Hauschka. 16% Tyrod Taylor. 6% voted LeSean McCoy. The Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week, powered by Blue Rock Energy, the official electricity supplier of the Bills. Go to BlueRockEnergy.com or Blue Rock Energy's Facebook page to learn more. We let you vote every Monday after the game.
You know
who the Blue Rock Energy Player of the Week is.
Yes. I think Tre'Davious, you know, he had a big play.
Yeah.
He sealed the deal there. But I think that might have been, like, the closest. If I was voting, that would have been the closest. I don't know who I want to vote. Yeah, because Hauschka, with his 50-yard field goals, you know, he put him in position.
How about somebody in the front seven defensively?
Yeah.
Who, though?
Yeah.
Jerry Hughes made some big plays.
I think they would be collectively. You can't really single one guy out. It's not like one guy went off and had a bunch of sacks or anything like that, you know. But when you think about, you know, Hauschka, Tre'Davious, LeSean, and then Tyrod, you know, it would have been like the closest. Nobody really had a huge breakout game or something like that, but everybody played well. You know?
It would have been a close vote. I don't know where I would have voted on that one. We do it every week. Give a chance next week.
Yeah. Some weeks is, like, obvious.
Right.
Other
Slam
weeks,
done.
Yeah.
Not this week.
Not this week.
How many wins left in this Bills season? What do you think? Here is Leroy in Buffalo. Go ahead. You're on the air with us.
Yes. Thanks for taking my call, John.
Sure.
Donald. Yeah. My thing is, I think all these games left is winnable games. And I believe we could beat New England and beat Miami and beat the Colts and win the last five games.
Win all of the last five games.
Right, all of the last five games. I think the worst they could do is go 4-1.
The worst they will do or they could do?
Yes.
They could do worse.
They could.
We've seen that.
Worst thing.
Yeah.
Well,
that's fairly optimistic. It's tough to win. I don't want to sound like Dick Durand. It's tough to win a game in the NFL. It's tough to – I mean, the Patriots have won seven in a row. That kind of jumps right out at you like, whoa, seven straight wins.
I mean, I talked about it's tough to sweep – the Dolphins. You're talking about sweep the Patriots and the Dolphins in the last five games? I mean, that's tough to do. Not to say that they can't do it. Yeah, I mean, anything can be done. You know, they can sweep them and go 5-0. They can get beat in all of these games and go 0-5.
Yeah.
You know, so who knows what's going to happen. But to beat the Patriots twice here late in the season when they are really rolling. If you would have had the Patriots early in the year, then you could say, okay, you got a good shot at when they were still trying to figure out what they were going to do. Now they have things rolling, you know, without Edelman, without, you know, some of their key guys, they still have things rolling. So, you know, it's tough to sweep them. They need to at least win this one and set themselves up.
I heard the guys on the morning show on WGR talk about this. Would you rather have more I don't know if the right word is conventional schedule, where you get these division opponents, including the Patriots, you know, once in the first half of the season and once in the second half. I think it's interesting this way. I think it's interesting to finish, first of all, with seven straight AFC games, to finish with four divisional opponents in the last 5 weeks. It's different. It's interesting. I don't know what sets you up better for a playoff run.
Yeah.
The fact that you're looking at three straight home games and three of the last five at home, I think, bodes well. It's just a different way of doing it. We haven't seen a schedule quite like this.
Yeah, you can kind of look at this thing a few different ways. You look at, you have three straight home games, and you say, man, they set us up well, you know, but then you look at it, we have four divisional games in the last five games. Well, that sucks. We got to play the Patriots twice in the last five weeks. That is terrible, you know, but look, if you want to be in the playoffs, you got to win some big games. And they've set themselves up at this point to where they have big games late in the season, you know, and you have three at home. So I think I'd rather, you know, I don't care if it's divisional or not. I just want to set myself up for big games. And to be honest, divisional games make it more interesting.
It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
Let's try it. You know, nothing else has worked over 17 years. Let's give it a shot. Maybe this
next
is the
year,
way to do it.
If it works, then next year the Bills won't have any divisional games in the last five games.
Yeah, because they hate us. We know the league hates us. We're going to break, and Steve Tasker standing by to join us for hour three of the show. Come on back for that. We'll continue this discussion. How many wins left in those five games that remain for the Buffalo Bills? Give us a call, 803-0550 and toll free 1-888-550-2550. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
Radio Network Sports Update.
And One Bills Drive, the Bills coaching staff busy at work today working on the game plan for Sunday's matchup with the first-place New England Patriots. First game against the Patriots this year for Buffalo. They will travel to see them again in 3 weeks on Christmas Eve in Foxborough. Head coach Sean McDermott says wide receiver Kelvin Benjamin is day-to-day with the knee injury he suffered against the Chargers 2 games ago. Bills say it's a meniscus tear for Benjamin. He did not practice at all this past week. Buffalo players return to practice tomorrow. The matchup against the Patriots Sunday, 1 o'clock at New Era Field. The Bills' first of three straight home games. Patriots quarterback Tom Brady acknowledges that he's a little sore after taking 8 hits in Sunday's win against the Dolphins. Brady, at age 40, has had people talk all year about the number of hits he has taken. In early October, it was a big issue, but Brady is on the same rate as he's been in the last 5 seasons in terms of the number of hits he takes. Last night, the Houston Texans had a chance to do the Bills a favor in the playoff race. They did not. The Baltimore Ravens, still now with the number 6 seed in the AFC playoff standings, the 6th and final playoff seed, the Ravens beat the Houston Texans 23-16, despite the fact that the Ravens were sloppy on offense and defense. So the Ravens 6-5, and they have the number 6 seed ahead of the Bills with 5 weeks remaining. Baltimore holds a tiebreaker with a better conference record at 5-3. Broncos cornerback Aqib Talib and Oakland wide receiver Michael Crabtree have each been suspended 2 games for the fight that they had in Sunday's game. Both players plan to appeal, that appeal coming up later today. Hugh Jackson, Cleveland Browns coach, says he has plans for wide receiver Josh Gordon as he returns to the lineup. He hasn't played since December 2014. Hugh Jackson says, quote, "I've got big plans for him. I plan for him to play and play as much as he can handle." And the Buffalo Sabres take on the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight. 7 o'clock faceoff at KeyBank Center. Zach Bogosian back at practice yesterday, nearing a return to action. He's missed all of the season so far with a lower body injury. That's the update from One Bills Drive. John Murphy, Donald Jones, joined in studio by Steve Tasker, Mr. One Buffalo, who's got his Bills jacket.
Oh, yeah, Sabre. I'm going to the Sabres game tonight, though.
So what about Bandits?
I just got the jacket.
You got a Bandits t-shirt on?
Yeah, right.
Actually, no, I got a Bills shirt on, Bills polo on.
Now all
got
Bills.
I'm fumbling with the jacket here.
Can't zip it up.
Those are nice jackets.
Yeah. They are.
Those. Yeah.
See, I've got a Bills polo
Sheesh.
On.
Okay, let's stop right there.
If it's free, give me 3.
Steve Tasker in studio with us for the next couple of minutes or so. You're welcome to join us at 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-550-2550. You told me a funny story out in the green room area before you came out about watching the game this past Sunday, Bills and Chiefs, and you and several of your teammates had similar reaction at the end of the game when the Bills had the ball and ran 3 plays and didn't do anything with it.
You can imagine. It's like, and I tell you this is a text loop. It's like having the five living presidents on your text loop. It's Jim Thurman, Bruce, Cornelius Bennett, Daryl Talley, Andre. and me, and you know, and so they start in, you know, and they're because they're just like the rest of it. We're riding that roller coaster, you know. Yeah. It's like we ain't. There's no way we're gonna win this game. It's like, oh, nice. Oh, hey, wow, we're playing. They can't beat us. It's gonna be awesome. It's like, oh, we're gonna blow this. It's, you know, so we're riding that wave, and you can imagine the text loop between them. But I told you the last time they didn't think we were going to win was when that last offensive possession, yeah. when we got them to use their timeouts,
yeah.
and we were like, you know, you may as well kneel down, you know, for as bad as they looked in those three plays. But, yeah, hey, it worked.
Do you guys send a bunch of emojis or?
No emojis. I ain't got time. Come on,
bunch
man.
Of mad face emojis and stuff?
We're in our 50s. You know,
like my father. I sent my father an emoji once, and he was like, "Hey, don't ever send me one of those things again."
We usually use words instead of emojis. Yeah. Although we'll do the thumbs up once in a while. The guys do that, and yeah. a fist bump, that kind of thing.
But people do that, right, when they watch Bills game. You know, I have a group, and my wife makes fun of me, but we're all Michigan basketball fans. And when Michigan's on TV, my wife calls it the peanut gallery. There's like four of us who send texts to each other.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and it's usually directed at the other coach, you know, Izzo, what a jerk, that sort of thing. But seriously, it's usually directed at the other team.
Is the entire thing written out like you're writing a letter? Or?
Oh, no, it's just.
No, I'm just messing with you.
Yeah. But people do that, right? You can't be the only ones that watch a Bills game.
No, I'm sure it is. In fact, I have another buddy that here in town, and he had the same kind of thing. We usually kind of, if I'm not working, which it's been a couple of weekends this year, we kind of get together, and we start in right away, just up and down and riding and just all in, and then abandoning ship, you know, is the first sign of trouble. And I texted him, since we hadn't talked at all, and I texted him, after the Bills took the lead and you know, early in the game, first half, and I said, okay, do not text me at all this game. We got a thing going. And then pretend I didn't send this one.
Yeah.
So I didn't talk to him until after the game. And he was, yeah, so.
It was an improbable win in Kansas City. You didn't see it coming. You didn't pick it.
I did not.
None of us
no.
did.
Listen, I've still got scar tissue from when I played, from when we went in there, you know, strolling in there in Kansas City. And I did a Monday night game there this year. I watched him play Denver on Monday night there on the sidelines for Westwood One and Denver was, not even a speed bump for that team at that time. And I had told you guys this on the show. The big problem with Kansas City is through that first 5 weeks we were talking about them because, you know, obviously they explode onto the scene. They beat New England that opening week, and everybody's like, wow, look at these guys. Yeah. And I told you then, well, not then, but like after week four.
Can they sustain this?
They can't sustain this. I mean, they're playing too good, and the season is too long, and sure enough. They've hit a valley here that I mean they don't even, I don't even know if they've bottomed out yet. So it's strange and unusual, but it happens.
They have a parallel decision and quarterback like the Bills faced.
Yes.
What would you do if you were the Chiefs, Steve? Would you bring in the rookie Mahomes who hasn't played, or would
no.
you let Alex Smith go? You
I know I wouldn't. And reason being, when the Bills drafted Nathan Peterman, everybody talked about. He's probably the most NFL pro ready.
Yeah.
Yeah, because he's played in this system. Pat Mahomes has been there now, you know, most of the season, well, all of the season. He's been there since the spring, since they drafted him. But he played in a system that was just backyard football.
Right.
You know, so I don't think he's ready at all to come into the game. You have Alex Smith, who was playing like an MVP type of quarterback early in the season. You have to hope with all of those playmakers.
Playing.
Exactly. You got to hope, though, with all those playmakers, he can turn it around. You know, he just haven't been able to do that.
You got to – I got to ask myself, what's changed for the Chiefs? What's happened to them?
Right. They still have all those playmakers.
They may have some protection issues. I mean, because the Buffalo Bills have not been a team this year that have gotten a lot of pressure on quarterbacks. In fact, you know, not very much at all.
Mm-hmm.
And they were doing it in this Chiefs game this last week. They were getting some pressure. So, you know, their offensive line is an issue for them. I don't know that Mahomes would make that any better. You know, maybe he can run
might
better.
Get worse.
Yeah, it might get worse. I mean, he might fold up. And run quicker.
Yeah, just throw deep balls.
But you think about it. We talked about this last week, and we were laughing. You know, amidst the you know Nate Peterman switch out that the Bills had, and I said, you know, it happens, and we couldn't believe it then that people were calling for Alex Smith's job.
Yeah.
And now it'll be interesting to see the mentor that Sean McDermott looks to, and for a lot of his coaching decisions, is in the same exact spot that McDermott was in 3 weeks ago, where the offense was struggling, they can't do anything. Does he make the change to a rookie quarterback? That'll be if he does. He's not going to because he's already said that.
Right.
But if he does, that would validate Sean a little bit.
What was that? What was that thread like when they made that change, when the Bills made the change from Tyrod to Nathan Peterman? That
text? No, they could see, because the players knew that, and because they know how it's the only important thing is how it plays in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what we think doesn't matter and all that. So that's what they were thinking. I said, what are the guys thinking? They said, we could see it.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see Tyrod doesn't throw it accurately. Even the game in Kansas City, there were those 10 or 12 or 15-yard throws that were in the dirt. You know, the guys were bending over, catching them off the top of their shoes. And there was the O'Leary catch that's been gotten a little bit of play where, you know, if it was 2 yards different, you know, if it was, you know, over here instead mm-hmm. of at his feet, you know, that turns into a big play. Maybe turns into 3 points.
Yeah.
So, we're seeing that just like everybody else is. And, and then, too, of course, before Peterman got in and played like he did, we were, like, thinking, that, you know, we were thinking top end of that scenario, not the abyss that it turned into.
I see two interceptions.
Yeah.
You and your text buddies, your Hall of Fame.
The five presidents. that all those guys, they could see it, so they didn't. And you know, like they know, and they know better than anybody. We don't go to practice. We don't watch them. We don't see what they see. And mm-hmm. So you kind of trust that there's something in there that gives them an inkling that, you know what, maybe this will be the thing that gets us to turn the corner offensively.
Yeah. Among the five presidents, I'm fascinated by this. You could sell subscriptions to that text chain. who's the most outrageous? Who's the funniest?
Bruce is very vocal.
Really?
Yeah. Jim never chimes in because he's always in the woods hunting or something this time of year. You can't get him out of the woods and stuff. Cornelius is big in it. Daryl and Thurman are comic relief. But yeah, we all kind of think along the same lines. It's amazing. We all have the same exact thought at the same moment. Yeah. You know, we'll start chiming in and texting and one-upping each other. So it's we're just like everybody else. Yeah. You know, you pull for a team and the organization that means so much, and we were riding that roller coaster, man. It was up and down.
By the way, Cornelius is coming in this week. He's the leader of the charts.
Yeah,
be good to see him.
He's one of the all-time great guys.
Get him in the show.
All-time great players, great teammates. He was a real difference maker for that. We got him in that trade when we sent Greg Bell to Los Angeles, and the Rams sent Eric Dickerson to the Colts, and mm-hmm. everybody traded first rounders and stuff, and we got the first pick of the draft, and he walks in the joint, and he walked around. You could just – he was special. He really was, in every sense of the word, both personality, character, and obviously talent. He mm-hmm. was just – he was just a home run. Yeah. It was great. It's going to be great to have him back.
Steve Tasker in studio with us. You're welcome to join us, 803-0550, toll-free 1-888-552-550. Like we like to do this on Tuesday, Steve, because we're putting last week's game to bed, looking ahead a little bit, and kind of taking stock of where the Bills are. You know the drill here. 5 games left, 3 in a row at home, 2 against the Patriots, 2 against the Dolphins, and the Colts thrown in there. Our Twitter poll today, we're asking fans, how many wins do you see out of these remaining 5 games? And most people settle on the same number of wins, which I would too. How many wins out of the final 5 games? 79% say 2 or 3, 13% say 4 or 5, 8% say 0 or 1. Where would you land on that scale?
Yeah, I'm right in there, 2 or 3. I think going 4-1 is you know, I think there's no question. You think you got to favor them over the Colts, particularly here in this building.
Right.
The Patriots are it's tough to get a gauge on them. Mm-hmm. Their defense is not very good. I could see the Bills, depending on the situation with them. It's hard to see them winning this game here, even this weekend, with them playing the way they are. But late in the season, you know, I could see the Bills splitting with the Patriots. I really could. Even going in there, trading home and homes, and both those teams winning on the road, I could see that either play out either way. The Dolphins, you got to think if the Bills play their game, they can beat those guys. But here's the problem. They're playing them like twice in 2 weeks or 3 weeks, right? There's a Dolphins game, then another game, and then the Dolphins again, right? Is that the way?
Yeah, it goes Dolphins. Well,
that's
goes,
really hard.
Yeah. Dolphins, Patriots.
That's
Dolphins,
really hard.
Yeah.
I think that's a split.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a split.
With the Dolphins.
Yeah, because it's just too hard to beat a team like that, even if you beat them once.
Yeah.
Now, here's the thing. You beat them once. If you get them down, I mean, that's one of those games where you run it up 65-0.
Right,
you know,
right,
I'm exaggerating,
right.
But you because that will break them. They'll think, man, now we got to play these guys again. What are we going to do? But if you know, if it's a close game, then they come back, they bounce back, say, hey, no, we got these guys, or whatever. But you know, at the end of that game, if it's 63-0 like it is in high school sometimes
or college,
they're going to come back in 2 weeks and say, you know, let's get this done with, this season's about over.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's, but I see that is really tough. That close playing that same team, it's really tough to beat a team like that twice in a row.
I'll just say this, and I've said this already today, Murph. You need to win these you know, at least two of these three games. You know, you don't want to put yourself in a position to have to go on the road the last 2 weeks of the season, have to win those games. It will be meaningful, but you're talking about going down to New England, which, yeah, it's late in the season. They might not be playing their starters, but you're talking about – that's not the last game of the season.
That's week 16.
Yeah, right? Yeah, you're, it's not even week 17.
Unless the Steelers fall down or the Steelers win out and the Patriots drop one or two and now they can't improve or unimprove. You know,
right.
They're going to win the division no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
Then maybe they start, you know.
But in week 16 with
– Yeah, that's
– So Belichick right. traditionally that, just doesn't
That's
do
asking
that.
A lot.
Yeah.
Because he's – you know, they're a team that's got a lot of experience with different scenarios. They're going to say, listen, last time we did that, when you know, we don't want to sit guys down 2 weeks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
That's hard because it – you know. Now, they might sit him down completely one of those games.
Right.
Even that, though, man. They've got to stay sharp.
Belichick doesn't do it like
they
that.
They want to stay sharp.
Yeah.
You know, and that – you know, they've done it now. A couple of years ago, you mentioned earlier in the show, Murph, where, you know, they did sit Tom Brady down the second half and Bills won that game.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but that's asking
that's
for a lot.
That's week 17, right?
It's asking for a lot.
Yeah.
There was a time – well, the Bills won that game and then went back to Foxborough the next year and won against Jacoby Brissett. And I recall being on the bus saying to somebody leaving Foxborough Stadium, we own these guys now.
Yeah.
No, just, yeah, right. You're going to get Jacoby Brissett again in a couple of weeks. So.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's just amazing because you think back to when the schedule came out and we were talking about, you know, what part of the schedule do you hate? What part of the schedule do you like? And so many people said, why do we have these home games in December? Well, now you're glad you have these home games in December.
Yeah,
these are actual meaningful games.
That's when you want them.
Divisional meaningful games in December.
It's an unusual schedule, Steve. You've been around it a long time. To play those two division opponents in the last, you know, twice in the last 5 weeks, to get three in a row at home.
That
in
is
December,
unusual.
It's unusual.
It is unusual. And they started doing this, I think, remember back when Roger Goodell took over as commissioner, they said, you know, let's do some things here with the schedule. And they put a lot of the division games in the front of the schedule and then in the back of the schedule.
Right.
And it really did kind of enhance the beginning of the season with the importance of the games, and then of course at the end of the season you still got a chance to mm-hmm. you know, get in. So it I think it was a good thing. This is a little bit of an exaggeration of that idea, in my opinion. Getting four out of the last five and three at home, if you get three at home, I can see that's a pretty good deal.
Yeah.
So that kind of evens that out a little bit, but nevertheless, I think it's been good, but it does make for this unusual situation where you got the Dolphins twice in 3 weeks.
That's tough to do.
Steve Tasker in studio with us. We'll take a couple of your phone calls here. Jeff calling from Jamestown. Jeff, go ahead.
Hi.
Hi, Jeff.
Sorry, it's cool in my room. I figured out the playoff picture, I think. Sorry, I'm in Queens.
Okay.
I'm waiting for a while. I went down the last five games, and I got the Bills as a 16. Final, I got the Ravens at 11-5, and it's going to come down to the last game, the Chargers. I think they'll win the division, but the Chargers play. Let me see what I got here. Raiders versus the Chargers, and the Bills versus the Dolphins. So I got the Bills at 10-6, Jaguars 11-5, and Ravens 8-8.
All right. You know what's a great? Have you guys seen the tool? They've done it a couple of years. The New York Times, like, playoff predictor, you can plug in.
I've heard of it. I've not
it's
plugged
spectacular.
In. Is it?
Oh, my goodness. You can literally spend hours on that, going through every game. Now we're down to the final 5 weeks.
Right.
And just thinking of the different ways this could all finish out. I try to avoid it until the final, like, 3 weeks or so.
Well,
but
it's really
– it does exactly what the caller in Jamestown was saying, only it does it in an instant. You know what I mean?
It's and he talked about the Chargers. We were talking about the Chargers winning that division. You look at their schedule. I mean, they have the Browns this week. They have the Redskins. Then they have the Chiefs. And then they have the Chiefs on a Saturday night on the 16th. And then they have the Jets and then the Raiders the last week of the season. So you can see them actually winning that division. If they play like they've been playing, they could go on and win that division, you know. That would be something that – you know, the Bills would want to happen as you do have those tiebreakers over the rest of those teams in that division Baltimore, though, is the team that, you know, we are looking at right now. And Baltimore still having to play Detroit this week, Pittsburgh, and then Cincinnati the last week of the season. You could see them maybe dropping a couple of those games, you know, especially when you look at how they played last night. They're in the same position as the Bills. They have a good defense that has been up and down, you know, but then their offense just squeaks out some points and they end up winning games, you know. So what team does it better at the end of the season?
Yeah, their conference record gives them the edge right now. So the Bills have got to win against some AFC opponents, the Colts and the Dolphins and the Patriots. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's who they've got left. So the one thing that'll even it back up is when Baltimore, you know, has to go into play, I believe it's Detroit, you know. So that'll set them off back into where they had the same number of AFC to NFC division. But right now, that's why they have their tiebreakers. They've played an extra AFC opponent than the Bills have. So how that's going to work out, we got to wait and see. But, yeah, that's the team. I mean, that slotted them back into the number six spot of the playoffs last night, that win. And, Tom Savage throwing picks, you know. I mean.
Baltimore's always been a sneaky town.
You know, you talk about Tom Savage
a line
throwing
from a movie.
I tell you this, Jadeveon Clowney has really come into being a star player in this league. He looked good last night.
He is a monster. He is a monster. He is, and I can't imagine. They haven't been on the field very much together with J.J. Watt and Clowney. You can't imagine how that good that defense would be with the two of them. And you know, we'll probably never get a chance to see it because of, you know, the J.J.'s problems, injuries. But
And Whitney Merciless.
That's a defense that would be outstanding. Yeah. You know, that's a different club. But, you know, how many times, you know, injuries are part
of league.
It. Attrition.
With Steve Tasker, here's a call from Rick in Tonawanda. Go ahead, Rick. You're on the air.
How you doing? Thank you for taking my call. And I called after the Jets game. The last time we talked before that was way back when, and I actually had a question for Kent Hall at that time. So that goes way back. Wow. Anyway, Steve, back in the 80s, before you ever played a down for the Buffalo Bills, I was playing golf at the South Shore Country Club. We're on the second hole. It was all backed up. And some guy steps out of the crowd and goes, introduces himself and says, "My name is Steve Tasker, and I'm going to play a little special teams and a little right receiver for the Buffalo Bills." And, you know, the rest is history.
That doesn't sound like you, Steve.
For that, and, you know, I had no doubts about you because you had the resume. I had read about, you know, the transaction, and but you weren't the most formidable person in person, so to speak, you know.
Shots fired.
You were great. Thank you very much.
Hey, that doesn't sound like you, Steve. Did you? What were you looking for? Free greens fees at the time?
I don't know what that was. Well, we were already on the course. It was at number two, I guess.
Number two.
It must have been some sort of charity event or something. Okay. I don't know.
I stepped out of a crowd.
I don't see you stepping out of the crowd.
Leody, Kansas.
Right. I carry around my own PA system. That does not sound like
it
me.
Does
I must
sound
admit.
Like you.
Yeah, you don't remember it?
No. South Shore Country Club is where I started playing golf there back in the day. Yeah, no question.
It's sad when you drive by there and it's not there
anymore.
Ooh,
man.
Isn't it?
You feel old.
It's like a church burning down when a golf course
I remember
gets
when.
It's gone. Let's go to Rick and Clarence. Hello, Rick. You're on the air.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to say great show. And I hear you talk about how Brady's admitting to being a little sore this week. So I was thinking first defensive play of the game, we need to dial up Jerry Hughes and Lorenzo Alexander and make them hurt.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, even if he didn't admit to being sore, I mean, he's still going to come out and try to light the game on fire. So that doesn't matter.
That's probably the first time you've ever heard him acknowledge that he's got symptoms of being 40 years old.
Yeah. You know, we talk even with Trey Wingo last hour, when we look at the Bills-Chiefs game, and most of us start with what happened to the Chiefs, what's wrong with the Chiefs. You got to give credit to the Bills' defensive coaches, in particular Leslie Frazier. They had a different third down package that included Lorenzo rushing the passer much more than he has for most of the season. Now, that kind of thing, although Belichick will be ready for it now, that type of thing could be a good weapon this week against New England, right?
Yeah, they've got to find a way to get pressure.
Yeah.
But, you know,
and they hadn't up until last week.
You know, everybody wants to pressure Tom Brady.
Yeah, you got to pressure him up the middle.
Job one for New England is always protecting him. And he, you know, he sets his protection. He knows when to get rid of the football. He's been in that offense now for a little bit longer than anybody else has been in their offense in the history of the National League. He's been running that offense for 17 years. he, you know, it's his offense. Mm-hmm. If he needs some protection, he'll put it over there and get it. So it's hard to get to him. You have to have a guy get a one-on-one battle and win it. And it's hard to do. It's hard to do.
It really, you got to cover in the back end, you know, and get coverage sacks more than, you know, just trying to get to him as fast as you can, because that doesn't typically happen, you know. And he can, he's not a mobile quarterback, but he does know how to maneuver in the pocket, you know, step up, maybe take a half of a step to his right, and you see people miss. You have to cover up on the back end. If you can cover up on the back end, you can get to him.
Well, and that, I think that's the beautiful thing about what happened Sunday in Kansas City. They didn't blitz much, the Bills. I mean, they had four pass rushers. But the way they use him and the way they had Lorenzo disguise when and where he's coming from, I think they're onto something there. And I hope they can – again, you can't just line up and do it again, because they'll be ready for it now. But something like that I think would go a long way. And, again, sacks, I don't really care about sacks. I care about hurries and pressures on Brady, right? That'll make a difference.
Yeah, Donald made a good point. It's, it comes down to the back end of your defense with Tom. I mean, he is – he doesn't run. He can, but he doesn't run at all. I mean, he is slower than dirt. But he maximizes his ability to slide in and out of the pocket. He maximizes the ability of his offensive line to give him little creases to step into. He maximizes his throwing lanes. His whatever movement he does have, he keeps his eyes off the rush. You never see him tuck the ball and have to dodge around in the pocket. He's more a little bit more like Peyton Manning, where he'll, you know, he'll take a bad sack if it, if you get him in a gotcha defensive call. He'll just take the sack. So, yeah, it starts with the guys in the back end. I think it's huge that that E.J. Gaines is back and they get starting to get healthy in the back end. Humber's healthy. Now you got Milano, who's playing a little bit more and finding himself a little bit. So you're going to have – there's no question. You're going to have to play your best defensive game of the year to hold this team under 20 points. Forget about holding them under 10. If you hold them under 20, that's a win for you. And it's you got to look at the other side of the football if you don't win, if you give up 20 points or less.
A couple of minutes left with Steve Tasker, Bills Wall of Famer from the NFL on CBS. Mary calling from Dunkirk is on the air. Listen, hello, Mary. Go ahead.
Hi, Mary.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Go ahead.
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Yes. We can hear you.
Okay. Steve.
Yes.
Do you remember when the Bills were in Fredonia for camp? And do you remember the Fredonia Farm Festival going on?
The Farm Festival?
No, you're starting to lose me. Where was it held?
It was in the parks downtown in Fredonia.
Okay.
Kinds of booths. And I believe that you came to my friends and my booth, and you bought a hand-painted wall hanging. And I had said to you, are you from Fredonia? And you said, no, ma'am, I play for the Buffalo Bills. And I said, oh, are you an end? And you said, no. And I said, are you a guard? And you said, no. And I said, are you a tackle? And you said, no. And then you said, why would you say that? And I said, well, I thought maybe you sat on the end of the bench, you guarded the water bucket, and killed anyone who came near it.
This happens to me all the time, Murph.
Yes, and you said that. And my dad owned a bar in Fredonia, and maybe you came into the Fountain Grill when you were there. But that was my dad's bar.
That might be, yes.
Thanks, Mary.
I did have a beer.
Basically, you didn't look anything like a football player.
Obviously not.
Are you telling me the truth, sir? Because you don't look like a football player at all. Do you sit on the bench and just fill up the water?
Yeah.
One more call for Steve and Donald. Fred in Buffalo. Hi, Fred. You're on the air. Hi, Fred.
Hello.
Hi, you're on the air with us, Fred.
Yeah, hello. Got me?
Yeah, go ahead. What's your question, Fred?
Okay. Well, I don't have a question, really, but hi, Steve and John
Donald.
I'm wondering about the parity that's in this league now. I mean, it seems like besides a couple of teams, maybe everybody else is in the grab bag, you know, and you can grab them from this time forward. It's going to be tell time, and I think that Tyrod is reading defenses much better. I think all you need was time to do it, and I think that we used against Kansas City, we used a short slant route. which is good for Steve knows and everybody else knows, Don knows too, that, you know, you get your, get that yardage. If you got to get 2 or 3 yards, you know, get your third and two or third and three, run that little slant play. Have Tyrod get it out of his hand and have one of the, you know, one of the ends do it. Catch the ball, you know?
Yeah, that's what they're trying to do, right? Get the ball out of his hands quickly?
Yeah. I mean, he throws it to the tight ends quickly. You've seen a slant route or two in the last game. So I think that's a better way to do it for Tyrod Taylor so that he is getting the ball out of his hands a lot quicker. You got 3-step drop, boom, get the ball out of your hands. I think that's a good way. But ultimately, this offense, they need to be able to run the ball, you know, and you brought up the stats. And that's using Tyrod Taylor's legs as well. I don't know how the Patriots are going to try to play this Bills offense. We never know how the Patriots are going to play because they do something that you've never really seen every week. So it's going to be interesting to see if Tyrod Taylor is decisive this week because they're going to throw some things at him that he hasn't seen, you know. So, yeah. Okay, when he goes to 3-step slant, oh, is somebody there. At that point, does he get a little skittish in the pocket, not wanting to throw the ball because he's seeing some different things?
Yeah. Steve, before I let you go, and you've been around this league for a while, player, and as a broadcaster, this might be an impossible question to answer. If you took Tom Brady,
he's going to ask it anyway.
If you took Tom Brady away from Bill Belichick, how good a coach would Belichick be?
Probably the same guy he is now.
Really?
Not as many wins.
Wouldn't win as many Super Bowls, but I'll bet you they'd be in the playoffs more often than not.
An average or better than average quarterback?
Well, they wouldn't have a better than average quarterback. He would have found one and cultivated him. I mean, he did it with Jimmy Garoppolo. He did it with Tom Brady. He went 11-5 with Matt Castle, who he had teammates who will tell you to this day that Matt Castle couldn't play dead in a Western movie. And Bill Belichick went 11-5 with that guy. He is the best coach to have ever taken up the job at this point in history.
Really?
And he would be successful with or without Tom Brady. Now, there's no question Tom Brady is a special breed. But I'd like to know opposite of that. I'd like to know how Tom Brady would have done in Cleveland.
Right.
That's what I want to know.
Interesting.
I want to know how Tom Brady would have done in Jacksonville, or if he would.
You mean without Belichick, or just in a different
situation?
Or
in Houston, or in, you know, they would have taken Tom Brady instead of David Carr, you know.
You know what maybe happens? Doesn't happen is that, what was he, a 6th-round pick? Doesn't get a chance to play in those various other cities, right? He got a chance in New England.
He got a chance because of injury, correct? But then he showed them something, and they stuck with him.
Yeah.
You know, instead of going back to Bledsoe, let's go ahead and stick with Tom.
Which was kind of a gutsy call at the time. Mm-hmm. All right. Hey, Steve, you've got a broadcast assignment this week, Monday Night Football, Pittsburgh at Cincinnati.
Right. Yeah, I'll be on the sidelines for Westwood Run. It'll be, Pittsburgh's next time to hit the field since last night, you know.
Pittsburgh?
No, not
since
last
Sunday
night.
Sunday night.
So, it'll be interesting. I mean, Pittsburgh's playing so well right now. Their defense is good. Shazier is real. I saw Shazier as a rookie come in. He was a little bit, didn't know what he was doing. Now he's got a handle on what they want him to do and where he can. You know, he just knows what's going on around him.
Violently, too.
Yeah, and he's got a lot of speed and covers a lot of ground, and everybody plays better around him.
You know, I didn't know anything really about Shazier until last year when the Bills played him here when it was snowing that day.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, wow, Shazier is like all over the place. You know, who is this dude? And then I started to watch him a lot more.
I think you saw him. We had a preseason game in his rookie year, right? And against the Bills at Pittsburgh.
I think you might be right.
He was running all over the field. Yeah. And that was an eye-opener that day. Hey, do you have this experience? Every time I go to Cincinnati, we were just there October 8th.
Yeah, I had that game.
It always surprises me how cold it is at Paul Brown Stadium. You're going to be down, right? There's something about the dampness there.
Is it in Cincinnati or in Pittsburgh?
No, it's right in
Cincinnati. Right on the
river.
You're right. It's a little bit. Now, I've been there sometimes in September when it was, you know, it was like stir fry in there, too.
I've never experienced it.
But that's a stadium that was, you know, 6 feet underwater, you know, at one point in history when it was, or maybe that was three, it was
riverfront
then. But, it's a damp joint. And it's bare. I mean, there is no atmosphere, no frills at all. You go up to the press box, and this is a you know, $800-900 million stadium when they built it.
there isn't a picture of a former player. There isn't a picture. There isn't even. I don't even know if there's a picture of Paul Brown in Paul Brown Stadium. The press box looks like the waiting room of a brand new hospital. It is bare. There's nothing. I mean, it's so stark.
Yeah.
There's no atmosphere at all. There's no. It doesn't seem like there's any pride.
Yeah.
In the team, in the history of the team, and what it was, and what Paul Brown meant to the league. It is the most. You look around, it's like you don't really think about it until you think about it,
mm-hmm.
and then you look around, it's like, who all's ever even played here?
Yeah,
right? You know, you go back and they've had Anthony Munoz, Boomer Esiason, I mean Kenny Anderson. They got a ton of guys. Isaac Curtis. Mm-hmm. You go back through the history. Chris Collins, you know, all those guys. Nothing, absolutely right. Nothing in that stadium. It's the weirdest thing.
You got Monday Night Football, which means you and your text party there will be able to watch and comment on the Bills New England game Sunday at 1, right?
Yeah, I will be here, I think, for that game. I'll leave later that afternoon.
Okay.
Yeah.
Look forward to that report next Tuesday.
Okay.
I do. Thank you, Steve.
All right, guys, thank you.
Steve Tasker, Bills Wall of Famer from the NFL on CBS, joining us in studio. Back with more in a moment. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
We're back with more of the John Murphy Show.
Welcome back to the show. John Murphy, Donald Jones coming to you live from One Bills Drive here until 3 o'clock today. Tomorrow, Thurman Thomas in a practice report. And tomorrow we will go heavy into Bills-Patriots matchup. We can do it again today, obviously. Let's take a couple of phone calls. Let's go to Brian calling from Hamburg. Hello, Brian. Are you here with us today?
Yes, I am.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call, guys. I got a question for you that it's been all over the place for the past 2 days.
Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Okay. How did Zay Jones get up after that miss?
That is a great question.
I know what you guys think.
Yeah, we saw it. The video has gone viral. Zay Jones goes down to the ground attempting to catch a pass in the end zone and elevates himself somehow on the tips of his toes, Donald. You know, can you do that?
I don't know if I could do that. I probably could when I was playing. You know, it takes a lot of core strength to do what he did there. But when I first saw it, I thought that he actually – somebody, like, was on the DVR and rewinding it or something like that. I'm like, did he just do that? You know, it was really interesting to see. And I saw him earlier, and I wanted to ask him about it. But I forgot to ask him about it. But, yeah, I probably could. Could you do it?
No.
Why not? No, we probably could do it. Let's try it.
No.
Let's get down right in front of our desk up there.
Well, let's go in the back where the jerseys are hanging.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's go to Tom in Rochester. Tom, thanks for waiting. You're on the air with us.
You got it, gentlemen. My third phone call, but I was trying to get some work done today.
Oh, no problem. Don't apologize, Tom.
Yeah, no problem. Listen, I was dying to know what Steve thought about the celebration. I'm 61 years old, so that tells you a little bit about me. I go back to the 4 years we went to the Super Bowl. I had season tickets, went to all four victories at home. And, we went from like a flag for a legal celebration or, you know, excessive celebration to now, I guess, yes, I'm an old dude, but this is it's a man's game. And it's so weird. They're knocking the snot out of each other. And then all of a sudden you see them like doing like a, The frog hop. What am I trying to say?
Yeah, leapfrog.
Leapfrog.
Thank you. I was almost close. But it just, to me, it kind of negates what the game's all about. There's another word I'm looking for. It's kind of childish, some of it. Now, however, my favorite one.
I like
you
this.
Can't
What's
do this.
One?
Tom, you can't tell us how much you don't like in that day, but my favorite celebration. Is that what you're going to do right here?
Donald, I knew you'd all over me about
I can't believe you're going to do this.
Who's got down on his one knee and opened up the safe?
Yeah.
Opened the safe, took the money out, gave it to everybody, and they threw it up in the air. I thought that was cool as all get
out. Well, you can't have it both ways, Tom. You can't say you don't like the celebrations and then tell us your favorite one. Can you do that?
No, I guess you can't.
I'm just kidding. But look, I'm kind of in the same boat. I think some of them are pretty funny, right? We were talking about it earlier.
Yeah.
I think, the what's his name, Robbie Anderson laying
Robbie
down,
Anderson,
pretending to take a nap. It's really funny. The length of them is a little bit troubling to me.
Real, gentlemen?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, okay, thanks. My favorite thing to watch and I know you both would agree, is when an offensive player scores, he hands the ball to a big, huge freaking lineman and lets him.
Yeah, I don't mind that.
Oh, that to me is cool as I'll get up.
Donna, what do you think, Mr. Celebration?
I wasn't a running back, so I wasn't handing the ball to the linemen so that they could spike it. I wanted to do everything.
You wanted
myself.
The spotlight on you.
That's right. You know, it's just this is no. Ultimately, it's entertainment, and you have a lot of fans. You have a lot of the young generation of fans that are watching the games, like my kids' age. You know, and they're not doing anything that you know. Last year was so much talk about it being like sexually explicit or something like that. You know, because guys were doing certain things on the field that were.
That's gone for the most part
right.
this year.
Yeah. All of that stuff is gone. Now the guys, I can understand it's taken a long time.
Yeah.
And I get that. But at the same time, like when I watch a game with my son, he sits there and he's like, oh, they're about to celebrate, Daddy. And then they do something and then he tries it, you know. And I get a joy out of watching him try what they're doing on TV.
That goes to his caller's point about it being childish.
You know, it depends on – you got a lot of younger generation of people that's watching it, and it's entertainment.
It is entertaining.
But, you know, my argument is, you know, my son also says dilly-dilly, which is an issue that he only sees during football games, you know. And I'm like, what the mess is going on here? Dilly-dilly, you don't say that. You know, you shouldn't be watching that commercial anyway.
Hey, we got time for one quick venture into NFL True and False. This is bizarre today. It came up today. Chuck Pagano, Colts head coach, news conference this morning, I guess, and he got off on a weird tangent, which I don't know whether to laugh or to worry about him. Chuck Pagano got talking about the movie Groundhog Day at his news conference this morning. Listen in.
Do you ever worry that this is going to become a mental issue for your players? Because it's, you know, kind of like Groundhog Day. It's over and over again.
Yeah. Yeah, that song played, you know, woke up to that this morning. Is that Sonny and Cher? Huh? I got you, babe. I got you, babe. Yeah. Went down, got my coffee, said hello to the what's-her-name, the gal in the coffee shop. Stole the money out of the back of the truck, drove my truck off the, you know, into the tar pit or whatever, off the landfill. Jumped off a building, lived through it. Did you see the movie? Did you ever see the movie, Groundhog Day? What do you guys do? You spend so much time on Twitter, you're not enjoying the better things in life.
All right, Chuck Pagano, a little bit weird. He got weirder.
I can see, he got a little bit weirder. There, I can really understand where he was going with it. He was just quoting things from the movie and singing songs from the movie, but.
See if you can understand this. Chuck Pagano continued on in his statement today.
There's a storm in the Atlantic. Hurricane, whatever you want to call it. When's it going to hit landfall? You know, it's coming. Third quarter, middle of the third. It's getting late third. They're up 10. Got to happen sometime. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy right now. Yeah. It is. And what's got to happen is, you know, being in Miami for 6 years, when them storms start coming off the coast of Africa and then they're coming through the Atlantic and they start coming up, what happens is if you get a nor'easter, right? You get a storm up top. Who's in there had done weather before? Huh? You know some weather people, Calabro. Who was it? Who's the best dude down there doing weather or dudette? Huh? Yeah, so when it comes down, that pressure hits, right, and it pushes the storm where? Back out to sea, right? And it goes up the coast, and there's very little damage. Those rings that spins this way and those bands up top are the – most egregious bands. They're far enough out where nobody gets hurt.
Hope he's all right. I don't know. It's bizarre. Weather, Groundhog Day, the movie, only tangentially related to anything about his football team. Groundhog Day, you're going to lose again, I guess. The storm, third quarter. I don't know where he went with that.
I don't know where he went. If you were in that room, what would you be thinking?
I would drop my pen and stare at him. I would think, somebody get this guy some help.
All right. I ask him from here?
Yeah, where do you go from there?
Where do I go from here?
How do you think about your third down defense, coach? I mean, maybe we'll hear some more Chuck Pagano next week before the Bills play the Colts.
That's going to be up there on one of the, you know, they do those coaches' rants and things. That's going to be on
there.
It's
not even a rant, though.
It's just rambling.
Ramble. We're going to take a break. We'll come back. The John Murphy Show from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.
the John Murphy Show on Buffalo Bills Radio.
And now, what have we learned from today's show?
What have we learned presented by Advanced Alarm, providing Western New York's homes and businesses with the finest in security and home theater, the preferred alarm and home theater provider of the Buffalo Bills. We had Trey Wingo on the show from ESPN's NFL Live, one of the few media members, at least at ESPN, who picked the Bills to beat the Chiefs, and he talked to us about it.
It just seemed like the right thing at the time. I mean, they tried the Peterman experiment. It went afoul. They were catching Kansas City at the right time, and they needed to make a stand after those three straight losses. And, as much as it was the turnaround to Tyrod Taylor, who knew that turning to Tyrod Taylor, the Bills would find their defense? Because that really was the difference in that game, as the Kansas City squad that had just not been right since the first five games of the year, and Buffalo really clamped it down and did a great job on defense there.
Good call by Trey Wingo to pick the Bills. I wish I could do that, pick winners like that. You could earn a living doing that, Donald, if you were good at it.
If you were good at it, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not good at it.
Me either.
I get so close to
Vegas.
Yeah, I get so close to this team. I don't know what's going on around the league most of the time. And certainly, I never feel like I know who's going to win. Do you ever feel like it's a lock?
No, definitely not this year.
No.
I have no clue. I'm sorry. I'm struggling with this onion.
I am, too. I'm struggling with your onion. I want to thank our presenting sponsor, Napa Auto Parts. Find your local Napa store online at NapaOnline.com. Production assistants from J.J. Torito, George Blass, Jeff Koltnick, Thomas Hollander, Olivia Merrill, Shelby Rush, our producer, Jay Harris. We'll see you tomorrow at noon with the John Murphy Show, presented by Napa Auto Parts. We'll come to you live from One Bills Drive on Buffalo Bills Radio.